Okay, before us is item 12. This is an item we've heard many, many times. Hopefully we're moving towards some finality. I have a statement. First of all, I want to apologize for, I understand that you're all here around 2 o'clock for the time certain thing, but it just didn't seem to make much sense to try to break up what we were doing and then try to pick it up many hours from now when we're still talking about this one. Okay, I'll read this statement and please bear with me. This is a hearing to receive testimony and consider adoption of tentative order number R9-2009-002, reissuance of NPDES waste discharge requirements for discharges of runoff from municipal separate storm sewer systems draining watersheds of the County of Orange, the Orange County Flood Control District, and 11 incorporated cities in Orange County within the San Diego region, that is Region 9. This is the time and place for a public hearing to consider testimony on the tentative order, the number of which I just read, and for the board to consider adoption of the tentative order. As indicated in the executive officer's summary report, the tentative order before the board is the fifth, I remind you, fifth version of the draft order to reissue the 2000 permit under which the Orange County permittees have been operating. The board held a public hearing to consider an earlier version on July 1, 2009 and heard extensive testimony on that tentative order. All the comments made on earlier versions of the tentative order are in the record for this matter and have been considered by the board. For this reason, the public notice for this hearing strongly encourages interested parties to focus comments on changes made to the tentative order since the July 1, 2009 hearing. I encourage interested parties to avoid repeating comments made at the July 1 or earlier public hearings, and also encourage you not to be repetitious today during this hearing. Of course, that goes without saying. The procedure for this hearing is as follows. First, we'll hear from the regional board staff, and I've encouraged them to keep their comments brief, less than 20 minutes. Then we'll hear from the co-permittees. Orange County, as I understand it, will be speaking on behalf of all the co-permittees. Thus, I think an hour, up to an hour, is in order. But I would encourage you to try to keep it to less than that 1 hour time. We'll hear from elected officials, and maybe we'll hear from elected officials early on, at least for the in each group. So maybe if you can sort out the elected officials, we'll hear from them. US EPA, with elected officials, we would hope that you would keep your comments to less than 5 minutes. US EPA, up to 15 minutes. Environmental groups. Now, I don't know how many environmental groups we have, but if we have groups of individuals, or whether you've combined your group members into a group, we'll give you on the order of about 10 minutes for each group. And then if there are interested persons that wish to speak outside of the groups that I've mentioned, I would like for you to keep your comments to about 10 minutes each. And we'll hear a response by regional board staff and a recommendation from the executive officer. So at this point, I'd like to ask those persons that are expecting to testify, please stand, raise your right hand. Please stand if you would. Raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you swear the testimony you're about to give is the truth? And if so, just indicate by saying, I do.
I do.
Thank you very much. And then when you come to the podium, please state your name, address, affiliation, and whether you've taken the oath before you begin your testimony. And before we begin with testimony from staff, I guess I'd like to hear from Ms. Hagen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had a couple of procedural type comments that I wanted to make. First of all, late yesterday, staff received for the board members received about a 2.5-page letter from Coast Law Group on behalf of the Coastal Environmental Rights Foundation. It generally supports the tentative order, but for the most part responds to a legal memorandum from November 5th that's included in your package. And for that reason, I think it's appropriate for the board members to receive that, and copies will be available for the public. And we can pass that out. Secondly, yesterday, also I think after 5 o'clock or thereabouts, Orange County submitted a letter with about 18 pages of proposed errata and revisions to the tentative permit. I haven't had a chance to look closely at that, nor has staff, and the board members have not yet seen that. And what I wanted to suggest is that rather than give that document to you right now, that the county incorporate as it wishes its suggestions for revisions in their presentation. And then when the board is deliberating, if you're interested in looking at alternative language on points raised by the co-permittees, then certainly you're free to look at that language and discuss it. Also, if you do want copies of that, please let me know and I'll provide that to you at any time. And then lastly, late yesterday also, Michael Beenan submitted a comment letter that he had previously submitted in this proceeding from 2007. He's not able to be here today. Since that comment is already in the record, there's no need to provide that to you at this time, but I just wanted to note that for the record. And then lastly, just wanted to remind or ask you to remind speakers who use PowerPoint presentations to please be sure to leave a copy for the board so that it's included in the record. Thank you.
Okay, and if the co-permittees would, as you're going through your presentation, please cover the changes that you're proposing, or the changes that you proposed in the via the errata sheet.
Do you think it'd be easier to follow if we had the errata sheet?
Well, it's... You would like to have the errata sheet?
Yeah.
All right. Catherine, a couple of board members.
Would it be easier to follow your presentation if we had the errata sheet? Yeah, they said yes.
Well, they all know. You're asking them if they thought we would. I think the question is, we have to ask ourselves is whether or not we would benefit, and we've heard two people indicate that they would. So, Catherine?
You may certainly have copies. I think staff has copies available. We'll have to take, if we'll have to take a close look at it as well and see how the changes affect the rest of the permit and so forth.
But again, the changes proposed in the errata sheet should be included as part of your presentation. So first, let's hear from the regional board staff. Up to 20 minutes.
Thank you.
Chad's going to hand you out a copy of my presentation so you can follow along if you don't want to watch the screen. Good afternoon, Dr. Wright and board members. My name is Ben Neal, and I took the oath. And my last name is spelled N-E-I-L-L. And I'm an engineer in the Northern Watershed Unit, and I work for Mr. Jimmy Smith, sitting right here. I've worked in the stormwater program since 2001. And I present to you and introduce into the file record the MPDS permit for municipal separate storm sewer systems in Orange County, tentative order R9-2009-0002, with all the supporting documents. This order will be the fourth term permit issued for Orange County. In your agenda package, we gave you the tentative order and the fact sheet, some minor errata to the order, a map of Orange County, timeline of events, the comments that we received on this fifth draft of the tentative order, and our response to those comments. I would especially like to bring to your attention in your agenda package supporting document number 7. That is a legal memo written by Catherine, Regional Board Counsel. This was to fulfill the board's request that we respond to questions regarding regulation of non-stormwater discharges. And it confirms our regulatory authority for those discharges and provides clarification on the question of unfunded state mandates. And if you have any questions regarding that memo, I would direct those to Catherine. I'm going to be brief. You said 20 minutes. I was timed at 18 minutes, so we'll have two extra minutes. But when developing this presentation, decided to go a different route because we've heard all these issues in July. And after we released that, we had no real significant new issues, just rehashing of the same issues raised since the July hearing. I'll go over a brief history of the permit reissuance process, a summary of your directives that you've gave us in the previous meetings, and including a directive to compare our existing permit for Orange County to this tentative order up for adoption, and also a comparison of Region 8's Orange County permit with the tentative order, looking at consistency. And we provided these comparative analysis to you in supporting documents numbers 10 and 11. At the end of my presentation, I will recommend that the Regional Board close the public comment period and adopt the tentative order with errata. So this busy slide is a timeline of the permit reissuance process for this permit. So in purple up there is the five drafts that we've written of this order. We are continuing the long process of reissuance. This was started back in 2006, and at that time we met with the co-permittees about their report of waste discharge, and we gave them comments on that. In 2007, we released the first draft of the tentative order and held a public workshop, and the first public hearing was also held. The tentative order was modified, and a second and third draft was released. An adoption hearing was held in February 2008, and at that hearing, a motion to adopt the permit failed to pass. And as a result, we got several directions from the Regional Board on what to do. First was to place a greater emphasis on measurable performance criteria that impact environmental outcomes. Second, take another look at the low-impact development and hydro modification requirements. Third, remove the regulations of FETDs. These are the so-called in-stream facilities that treat the water. They remove water from the creek, treat it for a specific pollutant, then discharge it back into the creek. Fourth, we incorporate any fully adopted TMDLs into the tentative order. And lastly, is look into the question of consistency. So if you notice on our timeline, it's 2006, 2007, then we have a gap here of February 2008 between the adoption hearing and the fourth draft in 2009. So during that time period, we're fulfilling those directives and looking into the consistency question. And during that time, we twice met with the executive officers and the stormwater staff of Region 8 and Region 4 before we met as a group with the US EPA and the State Board. At those meetings, We sat down with them, and we shared with our colleagues at the other regional boards and the state board what we felt was the future and our vision for the future of MS4 permits in Southern California. Unfortunately, consistency was not a real concern for the other regional boards because they had never received any comments about consistency from their constituents. We all agreed that the concept of a unified MS4 permit for Southern California could be a good idea, but the practicality of doing a single permit was beyond our resources and especially our authority for the whole Southern California area. And frankly, I would expect many of the other permits in Southern California to have to come up to the level of the MS4 permits adopted by this board in order for us to be consistent with federal regulations that are for anti-backsliding. Now, what is within our authority would be a single unified MS4 permit throughout our region. We have three MS4 permits, one for San Diego County, Riverside County, and Orange County. We could have a single permit for the whole region, and that's similar to what's being done in Region 2 currently, in the San Francisco Bay Area region. We can be consistent within our own boundaries with these three separate MPDS permits for MS4 discharges. And we can start this process with the upcoming reissuance of the Riverside County MS4 permit by making the next Riverside MS4 permit substantially similar to the tentative order that's up for adoption today. And then after Riverside County, we can follow up with the San Diego County MS4 permit. So that's how we looked at consistency during that time frame. And then in 2009, we released a fourth draft in March. We incorporated the board's directions, and we held a workshop in early April, met multiple times with various stakeholders, and held a public hearing in July. At that July hearing, if you remember, the board asked that we release a fifth draft, which we did in August, and we really had a full 45-day public comment period on that fifth draft. At that July hearing, the board also asked staff to include language protecting downstream water rights holders, provide legal clarification on the regulation of the non-stormwater discharges, and about the question of unfunded state mandates. And I'll remind you, that's in supporting document number 7 for you. And you also asked we provide a comparison of the tentative order to Region 8's Orange County permit, looking at consistency, and also a comparison with our current existing Orange County permit to look into any additional costs there may be with the tentative order. So, after 3.5 years, we are here today for the adoption of the tentative order. And this slide gives the 5 dates on the bottom here where we had a response to comments. And then the short dark bars are the number of comment letters we got. And then the tall bars, we separate out the comment letters into the number of comments. So have you seen in this last response to comments, it has been the most ever. We had over 400 comments that we responded to on the fifth draft of comments. The thing is about this fifth response to comments is we pretty much heard all these issues before, and a lot of the comments that we received in the most recent response to comments were just repeat submittals from the previous response to comments. So I have some numbers I'd like to share with you. In total, for this permit, over the past 3 years, we've had 4 hearings, 5 draft orders, 11 stakeholder meetings, 5 public comment periods. We received comment letters from 60 different commenters, and some of those commenters submitted comments letters every time. And we have responded in writing to over 1,200 written comments. So that's just the time frame for this permit reissuance, but I wanted to look in the larger picture of MS4 permit regulation. And this slide demonstrates what I think is the natural development in MS4 permitting over the past 20 years. Prior to 1990, pollutants in MS4 discharges were not regulated. Then the first Orange County MS4 permit was adopted in 1990, and at that time the cities needed to develop a stormwater program to address those discharges. The Orange County MS4 permit was reissued in 1996 and again in 2002, each time with more specific requirements. One thing, these permits all focused on activity-based outputs as the Cocomotives were developing their program to address stormwater pollution. This is the time period when the municipalities established their programs, and we measured compliance more by an accounting of the city's actions and activities they took as part of those programs. So today we're in 2009, and we're looking at shifting the focus of the MS4 permitting process. And we think this is going to progress us to the next level. The previous permits focused on the activities and actions of the cities. This tentative order now focuses on measurable criteria directly impacting environmental outcomes. This shift in focus to environmental outcomes is what I think is the natural and beneficial consequence of the science and reason implementing the original and unchanged federal regulations. Now, I'm kind of guessing here, but we've also put the year 2030 out there. So hopefully we anticipate that in the next 20 years, as we do this shift in focus to environmental outcomes, they will eventually, the regulations will become more robust and evolve, so we're restoring water quality, restoring beneficial uses. So then in 2030, we get to a point where we're focusing on maintenance and sustainability of water quality. So I think this focus on the environmental outcomes will be more apparent to you as I go over some of the permit details that were in the comparison documents, supporting documents numbers 10 and 11 in your agenda package. The left column on this table is going to be the topic of that I'm going to talk about. The next column is the comparison with the existing current order, and if that requirement is in the current existing order. And then the next column is in the Region 8 permit, and then the final column shows if that requirement is in the tentative order up for adoption today. On a side note, we did not compare our permit, our tentative order, to any other California MS4 permits, such as the recently adopted Ventura County MS4 permit or the Region 2 San Francisco Bay Area municipal regional permit. And I do know that those permits do have low impact development and hydro modification requirements in them. So if you see up on your screen, the first topic is low impact development. And LID, it is in the current permit, in the existing permit, but it's only recommended to be done in the existing permit. Of all the topics that I'm going to go over today, I think that this is the one that we have the most consistency with the Region 8 permit. And in fact, in response to the comments that we received from the co-permittees, we modified the language and requirements of our order so that they are nearly identical to the Region 8 permit. So the next topic I'll go over is hydro modification requirements. All three permits have hydro modification requirements to varying degrees of specificity. Now the requirements that we placed in this tentative orders is based on the hydro modification requirements found in the current San Diego permit. This way, we feel that the co-permittees can save their money and save their time by building on the processes and development that San Diego has already done in developing their hydro modification program. I mean, they don't have to reinvent the wheel to do the same thing in Orange County. So in response to comments we received, we did add a limited exemption for discharges to certain hardened channels, not to all hardened channels, but just to some of the hardened channels. Next topic is the water rights language. We incorporated language protecting water rights for downstream water rights holders, and this language is not found in the existing permit, and it's not found in the Region 8 permit. And we did this in response to what the board direction in July, and this language was at the request of a comment letter we received from Camp Pendleton, and we pretty much put the exact language that Camp Pendleton requested in the tentative order. This is the FETDs. These are facilities that extract, treat, and discharge, and this tentative order does not regulate these facilities. The existing order does not regulate these facilities, and the Region 8 permit does have regulations on FETDs, and we don't regulate FETDs in this tentative order. We felt board direction was pretty clear in February of 2008 and July of this year that it's, and the way we felt about it is that these are not part of the MS4, and they're more appropriately regulated through a separate MPDS permit or waste discharge requirements. So if you look at, up on the board, two of the things that come out are the water rights and FETDs were not consistent with the other permits. And this points out that consistency between permits is not always appropriate and it's not always feasible. And there are good reasons and appropriate reasons to be inconsistent. Water rights protection language is needed due to the new LID requirements in the permit. And FETDs are not part of the MS4, so they shouldn't be regulated by an MS4 permit. Okay, moving on. The next topic is retrofitting. The existing permit for Orange County does not have a similar section on retrofitting. The Region 8 permit does have a limited provision for retrofitting only in municipal areas, and the tentative order requires an examination of retrofitting opportunities at the existing development. And this is necessary for stormwater pollutant reduction to the maximum extent practicable. We feel the cost will not be extraordinary because the capital expenses for retrofitting are not explicitly required. The requirement is to explore retrofitting, identify high priority areas, and implement those retrofits where feasible. And the co-permittees can also incorporate some of their existing studies they have on retrofitting, such as they have a South Orange County Integrated Regional Water Management Plan that addresses retrofitting. Over irrigation, and this tentative order has removed the exemption for over irrigation discharges, which there is an exemption from prohibition in the existing permit and in the Region 8 permit. We remove this exemption to be consistent with federal regulations that say if you have an exempted discharge and it's identified as a source of pollutants, then it must be prohibited. So we took it out. We feel that the cost of implementing this requirement will not be extraordinary. The co-permittees already have programs to identify illicit discharges and to enforce their ordinances. And the co-permittees can also achieve compliance through their implementation of the Water Conservation and Landscaping Act, which requires the co-permittees to adopt their water conservation ordinance. Okay, stormwater action levels, that's SALs. They formerly were called MALs, municipal action levels, and then also NELs, that's the non-stormwater dry weather numeric effluent limitations. So at the February 2008 hearing, the board asked us to include more measurable performance criteria in the permit. The stormwater action levels and the non-stormwater effluent limitations fulfill that request, and these two provisions directly assess environmental outcomes. Like I said, the stormwater action levels used to be called the municipal action levels. The co-permittees asked us to change the name. We thought it was not a big deal. We went ahead and changed the name to stormwater action levels. The SALs were developed using the State Board's Blue Ribbon Panel guidance and are set at the 90th percentile of the pollutant concentrations in the existing data. The dry weather non-stormwater numeric effluent limitations were developed as required by federal regulations, which establish effluent limitations, and yet we did the required reasonable potential analysis and then established the required water quality-based effluent limitations. Now, we don't feel that the cost for monitoring on these is going to be any greater than their current efforts at monitoring. And we made some minor changes to the SALs and NELs based on the latest round of comments we received. The number of constituents for SALs was decreased. The action levels, which we recalculated them to be the 90th percentile of data. The monitoring for NELs was modified to more closely mirror their existing efforts at monitoring.
Your time is up.
Okay. I'm almost done here. In addition, if the supporting document number 7, the Regional Board Council's legal memo, clarifies that NELs are in conformance with the federal MPDS regulations. These four topics here, they're not found for the most part in the current permit or in the Region 8 permit. These are also the four requirements that will have the greatest benefit to environmental outcomes. I'd also like to point out that in the comment letters we received, the US EPA has expressed their support for these provisions. So here I am, I'm closing. The tentative order shifts our focus towards the environmental outcomes. This has been over a 3.5-year process. There's been plenty of time to hear, respond to, and to discuss all of the issues and comments from all the interested parties. As you heard earlier today, the 303D listings and impairments have increased in Orange County. Water quality objectives are not being met, and the existing permits have not been stringent enough to protect the physical, chemical, and biological integrity of our receiving waters. I feel the time is appropriate for this next generation of MS4 permits to be implemented, and this is the best possible permit that we could write for you today. Finally, and most importantly, the continued evolution of this MS4 permit is reasonable and necessary to further protect water quality for the benefit of present and future generations. I recommend the board closes the public comment period and adopts the tentative order with the RADA.
Okay, let's hear from the co-permittees. Yeah, we have. I wanted to see if we have any elected officials in this group, and let's hear from them. We have Mark Nielsen, Mayor of San Juan Capistrano, Steve Weinberg, Randall Brissett, and Andre Monette. Oh, just those three. Okay. And what's your name?
Verna Bollinger.
Verna Bollinger.
Greenhard.
Oh, yeah. Never got it. That was why.
Oh, you want to speak with a green card. Okay. Okay. Yes, sir. Please go.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, my name is Mark Nielsen, and I'm the mayor of the city of San Juan Capistrano, which is also a member of the San Juan Basin Authority. I've taken the oath. I'm here to discuss the impacts of the proposed permit on our city. I will leave the technical issues to others. Instead, I will focus, as I did in your last hearing at the Ocean Institute, on the devastating financial impact the proposed permit will force on the cities of South Orange County, while placing cities in the untenable position of being responsible for each individual landowner without any realistic chance of enforcing the requirements. Let me say at the outset that our city fully supports the intent behind this permit, which is to improve our overall water quality and sustainability. However, it is vital that we do so in a way that is doable and does not destroy the economy and overall quality of life of our cities and our citizens. There are ways to achieve greatly improved sustainability and do so in a revenue-neutral way. Our city has a strong record of putting these actions into words, words into action. Not only is the city at great cost to our citizens fighting Chevron for their two MTBE spills that are impacting our drinking water wells at a cost of over $3 million so far, but we have a long track record of city initiatives. San Juan Capistrano achieved 70% solid waste diversion after being at less than 30% about a decade ago. Our community recently voted for a $30 million bond to purchase and protect more open space for the community to enjoy, which also results in less pollutants to reach the creeks. We are funding riparian habitat restoration and have trout ladders going in for steelhead that have repopulated our creeks. Our annual creek cleanup day attracts hundreds of volunteers each year. These efforts reflect a goal of a well-rounded, ecologically balanced San Juan Capistrano. They're but a sample of the programs that the city is involved in, and I hope is enough to make the point of our commitment to the environment. With that said, I'd like to present the darker side of this message. We are in one of the worst economic times of our city. Many of our businesses have closed, approved developments are not being constructed, and developers have shut down construction sites as they've gone bankrupt. Our city, like others, has lost many of our car dealers that generated the bulk of our sales tax. Our general fund that the stormwater program and many other programs depend on is running dry. The state has reached into our pocket and forced us to make some major cuts to the various programs and critical maintenance services that we offer our community. This financial story is not unique to San Juan Capistrano. As I examine the new requirements of the proposed permit, I can only conclude that a major flaw in the analysis presented to you is the financial impacts of the permit staff is asking you to adopt. This analysis should be a critical factor, yet it is sorely missing. There is a whole list of new monitoring requirements for a lot of different pollutants, 38 I believe, that will cost us all huge amounts of money with no measurable return. This permit imposes mandatory minimum penalties for violations of limits that often we have no control over, from sources such as Caltrans right-of-way, federal lands, atmospheric deposition, or natural sources, as opposed to the more reasonable use of a maximum extent practicable that the Clean Water Act requires. I also ask you to remember the discussion you had at the Ocean Institute regarding the mandatory minimum penalty for South Coast Water District. Many of you bemoaned the fact that while the circumstances may not have warranted a penalty, your hands were tied because of minimum mandatory penalties. Now you have the opportunity to correct such a situation recurring in the future, but instead the recommendation is to add yet another framework for mandatory penalties that will again tie your hands in the future, yet this time it will be of your own doing. Please, I ask you to reconsider this path, which if approved as put forward, would result in literally millions of dollars of minimum mandatory fines on cities that can be bankrupted by this framework. I wish I was exaggerating, but sadly I am not. I know when I am sitting on the dais dealing with proposed ordinances and fees, I am always cognizant of the law of unintended consequences as to our own council's actions. This permit and penalty liability framework is fraught with unintended consequences to the city. We are suffering from water shortages and are diligently educating the public on the problem of over-irrigation in a time of drought and have adopted an ordinance dealing with the situation. We're also in the process of significantly increasing our fees and changing our structure for allocation and reducing allocations of water. Your permit mandates a prohibition of irrigation runoff, yet does so in a way that is impossible to enforce and again guarantees more penalties on cash-strapped cities. I ask each of you to look at your own watering and judge whether you can guarantee that not a single ounce of water gets on the pavement or curb. Our staff has shared with your staff the ongoing partnerships between the cities and water districts and offered to provide evidence of major reduction in irrigation and over-irrigation, but staff seemed uninterested. This mandate could potentially expose us to litigation efforts from third parties and possible mandatory minimum penalties. I suggest that the board direct staff to modify the permit to require cities to work closely with the water districts and report on the progress over the next permit term, but not impose the proposed unenforceable requirements. Again, these are but a few of the new unfunded mandates in the new permit that will cost us a great deal of money. I believe that the previous direction to staff was for a cost-neutral permit, but let me tell you, this is not what is being presented to you. I hope that you will listen to our South County representatives and speakers and take into consideration our financial situation. I urge you to direct your staff to make some of our proposed revisions that will provide a balance between water quality protection and improvement compared against the reality of what our cities financially can do and what is practical, as well as able to show a clear return on the investment. To do otherwise will merely result in yet another state raid on the ever-dwindling city funds. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. That's right at 5 minutes. So, Randall Brissett, Mayor Pro Tem from the city of Laguna Hills.
Yes.
Welcome.
I have taken the oath. Good afternoon, Honorable Chair and members of the board. The city of Laguna Hills is committed to clean stormwater discharge, and we embrace reasonable, enforceable, and effective water quality regulations. During my 18-year tenure as a mayor and city council member, I have had the opportunity to serve as chairman of LAFCO in Orange County and as Governor Schwarzenegger's appointee to the California Veterans Board. I've served on a variety of boards and agencies. And as a result of my experience, I feel quite confident and capable of speaking to you today, not only as a homeowner who is potentially affected by your decision, but as a local elected official with a regional and statewide perspective. And I dare say that everyone in this room would like to hold up one color card, because we're all here to have clean water runoff in our cities and in this region. But there are provisions of this permit that are not acceptable to Laguna Hills from practical, legal, and perhaps most importantly, economic perspectives. It is not necessary for this board to set unattainable regulations to reach our common goal of clean water runoff. Not only are many of the regulations in the draft permit extremely costly, but unnecessarily burdensome and impossible to enforce. The proposed permit would require all permittees in the region to spend considerably more on water quality at a time when all other areas of our budget, including first responder public safety, are being cut. In the last two fiscal years, the cost of our required water quality program increased by almost 11%, while our total operating budget has been cut by 8%, including the elimination of two police officer positions and an overall workforce reduction of 9%. The duty to regulate is in your hands, and I understand and respect those duties. The changes to the approach to attaining cleaner stormwater runoff must be done in an incremental manner that makes good sense to the public and does not place the emphasis of water quality above first responder public safety. You must know that complying with the provisions of this permit are not revenue neutral. Furthermore, as Laguna Hills is divided into both North County and South County regions, permit inconsistency between the two regional water quality boards is a major concern for us. There are fundamental differences between the two permits. Inconsistency creates regulatory confusion for developers, businesses, and residents about the NPDES requirements. Laguna Hills government, our residents, and businesses having to cope with the inconsistency of the two permits is frankly irrational. Alignment of the North and South County permit requirements is a critical issue that should be resolved prior to the adoption of the San Diego Region permit. The current draft of the tentative order has modified the non-stormwater exempt discharge section by removing the exemption for landscape irrigation, irrigation water, and lawn watering. How do I tell my constituents they can't water the lawn? This regulation change unnecessarily exposes the city to charges of noncompliance. It is also inconsistent with the North County NPDES permit. If the regulation stays in the permit, then the city will have to educate the public that irrigation runoff north of El Toro Road, the boundary between our two regions, is permissible but illegal south of El Toro Road. The issue of incidental irrigation runoff can be resolved through water conservation issues currently being carried out through the two public water districts that serve our community, which is understandable and being accepted by our residents. In an effort to stay within 5 minutes, Mr. Chairman, I'll just move to my conclusion, which I apologize for fumbling a little bit here.
I have the same problem, so.
Yeah. Well, the problem was I didn't put my glasses on. That's the real issue here. Nah, we got it. The draft permit and tentative order will place an undue financial burden on the city of Laguna Hills and all other cities within the region, and creates prescriptive technical requirements on the city of Laguna Hills stormwater program, while not necessarily achieving the desired water quality programs we all strive to achieve. The city believes that the board should recognize our concerns and issue a revised order that will allow all of us to work together as a team to ensure clean water runoff and an effective and successful stormwater program. 2.5 years and 5 hearings does not mean that you have to be finished with this permit today. This is not the best permit that your staff could give you. I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Steve
Weinberg,
Mayor Pro Tem, City of Dana Point.
Yes.
Welcome.
And I took the oath. Good afternoon. As you said, I'm Steven Weinberg, Mayor Pro Tem, and I'm going to try to make this in 3 minutes. I'm here representing the city Council, we have focused tremendous attention to water quality in Dana Point, are excited about our 303D list reductions and our epidemiology study at San Juan Creek. However, like most entities, we are struggling with budget shortfalls this year. We took a 10% cut last fiscal year, reduced another 5% beginning of this fiscal year, and are still not meeting our revenue budget through the first quarter of this year. It looks like further cuts will have to be made this mid-year. To give you an idea, in FY09, we budgeted $1.2 million for water quality, but this year we'll have to work with much, much less. As in many cities, our public safety budget comes first. It is the biggest aspect of our budget, actually. If this were ideal world, we'd give you all the resources for water quality. But we have pressing issues such as supporting police, fire, and supporting our infrastructure in the city itself. We are a beach city, and as you well know, water is key to our economic survival. What do you think our constituents are going to say if we tell them we have to cut fire and police services to cover the increasing board proposed water quality requirements this year? I think I'd probably want to run out of town. I realize that cost in and of itself shouldn't stand in the way of water quality progress. But the world we live in has to accommodate cost versus benefit for this and other functions. We have to prioritize our revenues on how they are spent. In addition to this new permit, we are just beginning to fund the new bacteria TMDL for San Juan Creek. I'm worried how we and the other five San Juan Creek watershed cities are going to fund this significant and important new initiative if we have additional new NPDES costs with declining revenues. Something has to give. The board staff says each little item is minimal cost. Well, a lot of little minimal cost is a lot of cost. They say the only way that we can cover these costs is ask our citizens for new taxes. This would be nice to contemplate, but I don't think our citizens are going to support that, particularly in this economic times. My staff has advised me that the State Board has acknowledged that no other MS4 NPDES permit in the state has NELs for dry weather flow, and that the NELs inherently trigger mandatory minimum penalties. I think it's a good question of why we are getting this language like no other region. When I ask what the impact, the county advises that the proposed NEL standards will fail at virtually every storm drain outlet, even at pristine water bodies that are untouched by humans. This has been confirmed by the independent studies of SCWRP. That's SCCWRP. The acronyms are going to kill me on this thing. So are we going to see mandatory minimum penalties for every outlet tested? Not a good way to start a new program. Let's reflect back, as my colleague from San Juan did, in the meeting concerning South Coast Water District and SACWA. The board questioned staff about why mandatory minimum penalties applied when the violation was really administrative in nature for groundwater development inland and not a violation of water quality standards at the receiving waters. Staff stated that the board had no choice and had to do a penalty of $204,000. Why would you again put the board in the same position by establishing mandatory minimum penalties for an untested standard that is clearly unattainable? We all lose. Given our strong water advocacy and track record with water quality programs and infrastructure to reduce urban runoff, I'm asking the board to reconsider the wording of several areas of the permit to get to the point that we can all live with. backing us into a corner.
Your 5 minutes are up, sir.
How many?
Your 5 minutes are up.
Hey, I'd just like to say, in closing, if we have to litigate this permit, nobody wins. We need to make this a win-win situation. If you back the cities in the corner where litigation is the only remedy, then we all lose. On that note, have a great holiday. And
thank you for your time.
You.
Appreciate it. Verna Rollinger.
Good afternoon. My name is Verna Rollinger. I have a frog in my throat. I've taken the oath. I have my glasses on. And I appreciate knowing that we didn't need to be here until this afternoon. A little less than a year ago, a group of residents from Laguna Beach and I traveled down here to one of your meetings and spoke under public communication to ask you to help with addressing the amount of water and pollutants that are entering our waterways. Little did we know at the time that you had undertaken this process. I'm here today because I personally want to thank you for your thoroughness, patience, responsiveness, and responsiveness during this process. Environmental sustainability is essential for the health of our waterways, beaches, oceans, and our residents, and this permit is an important step in that direction. I congratulate you and especially your staff for the work that's been done on this permit, and I urge adoption. Thank you very much.
And thank you for your brevity. All right, now we'll move to the organized presentation by Orange County. And who speaks for Orange County first?
Good afternoon. I'm Marianne Skorpanich from the County of Orange. I have taken the oath. I'll take just a second away from my comments to offer congratulations to the retiring executive officer and the newly sworn-in new executive officer. Best wishes to you both. We have 30-some representatives of the permittees here today, but we, in the interest of time, have consolidated them and appreciate your consideration. Supervisor Patricia Bates, whose district covers all of South Orange County, is in Washington, D.C. and was not able to be here today, but has a letter that is being distributed to you. So in the interest of time, I'll limit my comments to the reading of her letter to you. Dear Chairman Wright and members of the San Diego Regional Board, as Chair of the Orange County Board of Supervisors, I want to assure you that we share a common desire and commitment to keep the water in our creeks, bays, and oceans clean. These precious resources are part of our communities, and the quality of our environment is as important to our way of life as our economy. My board continues to take a leadership role on water quality issues and continues to provide support for the programs even during these current difficult economic times. At the same time, it must be recognized that urban stormwater quality management presents difficult challenges. One, our communities have been built the way they are for over 100 years, and no matter how much we would like to, it is simply not possible to rebuild our infrastructure overnight to correct all of the problems, even if we knew what all the problems were and how to correct them. Two, managing and improving the quality of urban stormwater is a relatively new field that is full of complexities that are not fully understood even at the national level. This is evident in some of the proposed permit conditions. 7 years ago, when the last permit was issued, the emphasis was on treatment controls at land development sites, and now that emphasis has fundamentally changed to on-site retention of stormwater rather than treatment. Three, funding for stormwater quality programs has never been placed on an equal footing with other Clean Water Act programs, such as sanitary sewers. Grants have been extremely limited, and there are very significant barriers in order to establish dedicated funding sources. Consequently, urban stormwater programs often operate in a competitive position with other important programs in general government. This is of particular concern in the current economic downturn when revenues are dropping and government employees are being terminated or furloughed. There is just no revenue to support new and expansive programs. Since the county and the city submitted our permit renewal application in 2006, we have spent more than 3 years working with your staff and board on appropriate permit conditions for South Orange County. In February 2008, we came very close to agreement with just one defining issue: regulations on regional treatment plants such as the Salt Creek Ozone Treatment System, although that permit was not adopted. It is consequently extremely disappointing that over 2 years later, the list of areas of disagreement has multiplied, and as recently as September 28th, the county's comment letter on the draft permit totaled 61 pages. This places you, as the regional board, in the difficult position of having to navigate through a complex permit with different interpretations of legality and outcome from your staff, the county and cities, as well as other stakeholders and interested parties. The county and the cities recognize this and have therefore put together a simplified version of some permit fixes that we think will go a long way to resolving a number of these issues. This has been provided to you as an errata sheet, and the details will be described in more detail by the county staff and city representatives in the following testimony. There are three overarching themes that you will see in the errata and hear in our testimony that follows. One, the regional board has considerable discretion in shaping an appropriate permit for South Orange County. Two, the counties and the cities are seeking much greater consistency with the key permit features of the North Orange County permit in order to deliver more uniform compliance in a manner that is as cost-effective as possible. Three, the county and the cities are seeking cost neutrality in the new permit and are deeply concerned with new requirements such as dry weather numeric effluent limits that could cost hundreds of millions of dollars to implement over the next permit term if diversion to the sanitary sewer is our only viable option. In conclusion, I would ask you to carefully consider the changes proffered in the errata sheet. Again, the Orange County permittees are eager to continue protecting our surface water resources. As a fellow policymaker, I request that you use the discretion within your authority to properly shape a regulatory program that can be beneficial and successful in achieving our mutual goals. Sincerely, Patricia C. Bates, Chair, Orange County Board of Supervisors. And if I may just make one note about the errata sheet, we did email it to your staff yesterday, but it's in essence the same language changes that we proffered to them in July following the July 1 workshop that you held. Thank you.
Ms. Skorpanich, do you want to, since you're the lead speaker, do you want to just introduce your speakers? I just want to try to find out who's part of your organized presentation and how you're going to handle this.
First up, I have Richard Boone from the county staff. He's the manager of the countywide stormwater program. Following him is...
And Mr. Boone, I just want to remind you that we heard from you at very great length the last time in your presentation, and I would urge you not to be repetitious from your presentation last time. I mean, I appreciate your expertise and all that, but it would be helpful for us if you could just zero in on the changes that have been made since the last time out.
And then we have a group of cards that were in order of the following speakers.
Oh, okay. All right. We have those. And by the way, I just can't help but comment, if we were that close last time, according to Supervisor Bates, there was only one issue. Why don't we just zero in on that issue and approve this thing and be done with it?
Ironically, sir, that issue has been dropped from this permit.
Okay, then we're all in agreement.
But there are now eight other major issues
let's go back to where we were.
We'd be happy to do that, sir.
Okay.
Good afternoon. Richard Boone with the County of Orange. a section chief of the county unit that administers the countywide stormwater program. I take your point that I went on at great length last time. I've worked considerably on my oratory since then, and hopefully will be much more succinct. Where are we at? You've heard that there are fundamental flaws with the tentative order relating to consistency, our ability to pursue cost-effectively development and implementation of a countywide program. We've identified areas today of inconsistency, and we know that this is an area of key concern to you. The last time we met, Board Member Weber suggested that staff compile a matrix to compare the Region 8 and Region 9 permits, but also provide a rationale for the differences between the two. Board Member Loveland, you agreed. You said that it's not good for the county and affected cities to be split between permits, and that needs to be reconciled. And we're here reviewing issues because we have been unable in meetings with your staff to reconcile those issues. And we're also going to talk about technical validity. Some of the actions that are being prescribed, I think, are not going to result in meaningful environmental outcomes. But unless we get off on an overly gloomy note, I do want to note that we do have specific fixes to offer. They're straightforward. You do have the discretion to direct that they be implemented. And we're talking about provisions that have gone into permits in Ventura, in our North Orange County area, and in the Bay Area that have been endorsed by US EPA. So where do we disagree? We disagree across these areas of concern of consistency of cost and of technical merit on low-impact development and hydromod, on stormwater action levels or SALs, on the TMDL language, on the reporting provisions, on obviously numeric effluent limits for dry weather flows, on some of the retrofitting requirements, on the BMP inventory requirements, and on the irrigation prohibition. I'm going to talk to the first five issues, and then I'm going to hand it over to council for some remarks, and then my colleagues from the South County Cities are going to go into detail on numeric effluent limits. So first issue for us, low-impact development. There is a very important difference between the language in the South County permit, the tentative order, and the North County permit. The permit that you have before you requires that LIB BMPs be developed and implemented to ensure on-site retention without runoff, and that without runoff is unique to this permit. As Ben noted, you've also added some language in the legal section saying that nothing herein shall authorize a permittee, co-permittee, or other discharger to impound water if the action is reasonably anticipated to harm downstream water rights users. We can't comply with those two conditions. They are mutually exclusive. If you require on-site retention without runoff, then we will be affecting downstream water rights users. The point is made in the chart below. What we're trying to get from is the post-development hydrograph back to the pre-development hydrograph. We're not trying to get to a flat-line hydrograph with no runoff. That is antithetical to the basic philosophy of low-impact development. So it's inconsistent with our North County permit. It has major cost implications. I think it's technically invalid, and it poses some interesting legal water rights issues. In terms of the technical concern, what you have here is some work that was done by GeoSyntec on our behalf, looking at how the hydrology of a site between the undisturbed natural condition and a developed condition over the course of the year. In a semi-arid climate over the course of the year, 70% of the rainfall that falls on that site will be evapotranspired back to the atmosphere. In the developed condition, using the low-impact development requirements of the permit, that 70% gets percolated into the ground, where previously you would have had 20%. So there's moving the problem from the surface to the shallow groundwater. This is monitoring of Aliso Creek outfalls in dry weather, which occurs between May and September, and this is the analysis for cadmium. And you can see that in particularly wet years, following particularly wet seasons, May 05 onwards and May 06 onwards, as that shallow groundwater is displaced, so we find exceedances of the cadmium numeric effluent limit throughout our system. So the more water you put in the ground through your low impact development requirements, the chances are you're producing unintended consequences in the system, the drainage system, in dry weather. So the fix: we need to establish the basis of the low impact development provisions as matching of the pre and post development hydrograph, and we also need to allow the option for biotreatment in addition to infiltration, harvesting and reuse and evapotranspirative BMPs on site. If we get to consistency with the North County permit, the provisions become cost effective and technically valid. Moving on to hydro modification, there has been some change to the exception to for hardened channels, but it is still a long way away from the exception that is written into the North County permit. What you have here in the picture is a section of San Juan Creek. San Juan Creek has concrete sidewalls, but is a soft bottom channel. So it does not meet the requirements for relieving a project proponent of having to deal with hydro modification. And that means much more costly and sophisticated management of on-site runoff. Before we can think about restoring that section of San Juan Creek, you would have to remove the businesses, homes, mobile park, and major urban infrastructure that is adjacent to that creek. So simply requiring that area of agricultural land towards the top of the slide, if it were to be developed to do hydro modification BMPs, would result in no net environmental outcome. It's technically invalid. We've also heard about the issue of splitting a land use authority. This is an intersection on El Toro Road. On one side, in the northwest quadrant, the land drains to the Newport Bay watershed. On the eastern side of that picture, it drains to Aliso Creek. So you have two sites, potentially, divided by a street, where one site would have to do an extensive hydro modification modeling exercise, and it simply wouldn't be applicable on the other site. So you're creating inconsistency across the city with regard to your development standards. So the fix: simply incorporate the language from the North County permit into this permit. It provides consistency, cost effectiveness, and is a technically valid requirement. Stormwater action levels: this is monitoring of wet weather flows. The cost analysis provided by your staff is vague, but we identify costs in the first year of meeting this provision of $480,000 and $250,000 annually thereafter. So we need to be able to offset those costs against other monitoring requirements. So the fix is simple. We reduce the number of outfalls from 28 to 1 to permittee, and you allow us to provide offsetting of other monitoring costs. TMDL issues. Compliance is currently based on meeting water quality based effluent limits, and it is not based on implementing BMPs to achieve waste load allocations. There is a lack of iterative process to evaluate and propose additional BMPs to affect compliance, so it has cost implications, and it's inconsistent with TMDL language in the North County permit. So the fix: we need to modify the permit to specify that BMPs and their implementation will be the basis of compliance with the waste load allocations, and the language is in errata sheet number 3. It's cost effective and it's consistent across the County of Orange. On the issue of reporting, the annual report, we have this struggle every time we go through this process of permit renewal. For the first two permits, we had a November 15th reporting deadline consistent with North County. It was changed in the third term permit. We wrote and requested that it be retained as November 15th. You agreed to that, and your staff have changed it once again. To be able to operate countywide on this matter of self-auditing and compliance reporting cost-effectively, We need to have the same date across the county. And lastly, the most, I think, obviously, the potentially precedential issue of numeric effluent limits. You're going to hear a lot of detailed testimony on why this is objectionable to the co-permittees. Numeric effluent limits are proposed for dry weather, and we end up in a situation of facing mandatory minimum penalties unless we can get to one of three off-ramps. We have to show that the source of the exceedance is non-anthropogenically influenced in origin and conveyance. We have to show, or we have to show that it's an exempted non-stormwater discharge, or we have to show that it is an illicit connection that we have eliminated. And my colleagues are going to talk about this in much greater detail. But if we look in the first box of information there, this is dry weather monitoring information compiled from our drains on a countywide basis. We can show that not only does the drainage system not meet those NELs essentially anywhere at any time, but you will see data that shows that pristine streams, totally removed from any urban influence, will not meet those standards. And in the case of bacteria, pristine streams do not meet the enterococcus standard pretty much any of the time. So we can't distinguish between the different components in the drainage system. You also hear, so if the drain cannot, if a concrete pipe cannot be shown to be totally non-anthropogenic, if we can't discern whether it's a discharge exception or a natural source, we're then faced with the choice of eliminating the dry weather flow to avoid mandatory minimum penalties. And you'll hear data shortly that shows that the cost on a South Countywide basis for eliminating outflows from our 480 so outfalls will be in excess of $400 million for capital cost alone. So the fix. We need to move away from the term numeric effluent limits and think more about action levels. And we need to retain the current investigative approach that's in the North County permit. And that is provided for you in Errata Sheet 1. It would result in a program consistent with North County, cost-effective, and technically valid. So, Tim?
Richard Montevideo.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Tim Carlstead. I'm actually with Bingham McCutcheon on behalf of the county, just following up on Richard Boone's comments, and then other speakers from other co-permittees will be speaking.
Yeah. Richard would be next after Tim.
This is Tim. Please, go ahead.
Again, my name is Tim Carlstead with the law firm Bingham McCutcheon on behalf of the County of Orange. I have taken the oath. I just wanted to follow up on some of the things that Richard said and reminding you of the legal framework which you're acting, and to suggest to you and to remind you that it provides you with ample discretion to make the changes that the permittees have suggested in their errata sheets, and that it doesn't, the Clean Water Act, support the numeric effluent limit provision that is in the tentative order before you. And I do want to thank staff for their efforts on this. Just the effort in responding to all the comments, even where I don't always agree with all the responses, quite an undertaking. The Federal Clean Water Act, it doesn't regulate stormwater per se. It regulates MS4s. It doesn't make a distinction between the discharge of stormwater out of the MS4 versus the discharge of non-stormwater out of the MS4. But what it does provide is an MS4 permit, it's pretty simple, must include a requirement to effectively prohibit non-stormwater discharges into the MS4, and an MS4 permit must require controls to reduce the discharge of pollutants from the MS4 to the maximum extent practicable. That's it. So long as the board issues a permit today that complies with those two requirements, it's consistent with Clean Water Act. The board does not have to issue a permit that includes such things as the requirement on the discharge of non-stormwater from the MS4 with the numeric effluent limits. You don't have to issue a permit that has 100% stormwater retention provision for low-impact development. You don't have to issue a permit that includes any requirement that goes beyond the MEP standard, including on such things like the retrofitting. The tentative order, as currently written, does all of those things. I think it's interesting when you're thinking about the discretion you have to keep in mind that no other regional board has issued an MS4 permit with these same provisions. Earlier this year, as you've already heard, the Santa Ana Regional Board issued its fourth term permit for North Orange County. Before that occurred, staff from San Diego, from your staff, met with staff from Santa Ana Regional Board and discussed with them what they were proposing: numeric effluent limits, the 100% on-site retention, the stormwater action levels. Santa Ana Board staff heard that and said, we're not going to go that route. Their board adopted a permit that didn't include those provisions. They have the discretion to do that. They didn't have to include those provisions. The Clean Water Act doesn't require it. I think in the council's memorandum that you have as part of your package, your council concluded that the numeric effluent limits are not required. In council's opinion, they're legally permissible, but they're not required. So you have the discretion not to include numeric effluent limits. You could convert them to something like an action level, as is provided in the errata sheet. US EPA supports this permit, but I think it's interesting to note that whereas US EPA supports the permit, they don't come out and say that all these provisions are required by the Clean Water Act. Go for it, in other words. The EPA fully supports this approach, but it's not required. So, again, as Richard alluded to, you have the discretion not to issue the permit with these provisions. You have the discretion to issue the permit with the changes that are suggested by the errata sheet. So why make the proposed changes? Well, first, the changes proposed by permittees shouldn't negatively impact water quality. That's the most important thing. The changes proposed are not going to degrade water quality. There may be some problems with the existing program, but these problems are being addressed by the existing program, and these changes will improve the program and consequently improve water quality. Second, the changes proposed by the permittees would provide them the flexibility to allocate scarce resources to the most significant problems. So let permittees implement the errata sheet, and they will be better able to use resources to address more significant problems. Third, the changes proposed by permittees will improve water quality without subjecting them to potential
As a compromise, rather than calling them numeric effluent limitations, if they were instead action levels or something other than an effluent limitation.
Your microphone. Just jiggle it.
Yeah, it's
closer.
Check the plug, Larry.
Oh, good. This is open mic night. As I was saying, the third reason to make the proposed changes by the errata sheet, as opposed to the tentative order that staffs have proposed, is avoiding mandatory minimum penalties, which has been an issue in other instances. The board doesn't like getting their hands tied and having to impose penalties, but if you adopt this permit with the numeric implement limitations, that is likely the route that you're going down. And then finally, I would suggest that keep in mind that the changes proposed in the errata sheet are somewhat of a compromise. We believe that some of the provisions in the permit wouldn't withstand legal scrutiny and would likely be struck down if challenged, so why go there? Why not take these proposed errata sheet, this compromise, and we're done. We don't have to waste resources in any type of litigation. So I would submit to you that there's plenty of good reasons to adopt the permit with the proposed errata sheet, and you're not required, you have the discretion to do so, you're not required to adopt those provisions that are in the tentative order as written. I would just like to touch upon the dry weather numeric effluent limits, because that is probably the, at least legally, the most controversial provision in the tentative order. Again, as I mentioned, the Clean Water Act does not regulate stormwater discharges per se. It regulates MS4s. as I mentioned, the permit, the MS4 permit must effectively prohibit non-stormwater discharges into the MS4. The discharge of all pollutants from the MS4 must be controlled to the maximum extent practicable. That's it. The Clean Water Act is very clear on that point. And I think the clarity is important because, again, if it was challenged, as you probably are aware, under judicial scrutiny, a court would not need to look at congressional intent. Why did Congress write it the way they did? It's clear on the face. Effectively prohibit non-stormwater into the MS4. MEP standard for all pollutants discharged from the MS4. EPA's regulations are consistent with that. They center around a management program. The goal of the management program is to reduce the discharge of all pollutants from the MS4 to the maximum extent practicable. Contrary to federal law, to the EPA regulations, the tentative order before you specifically makes a distinction between stormwater and non-stormwater, and consistently talks about the discharge of stormwater from the MS4 and the discharge of non-stormwater from the MS4. That distinction is not made in federal law. I would submit to you that the numerical effluent limits are not required or even appropriate in an MS4 permit. You'll hear later that even under state law, they're not required or necessarily appropriate here as well. If you think about numerical effluent limits, they're appropriate where the discharger, like an industrial facility, is in control of his or her discharge, and there are means of meeting a numeric limit. But permittees here do not have the same amount of control, obviously, of the discharges from their MS4. Moreover, the tentative order doesn't tie numeric effluent limits to the MEP standard. So what you're going to get is you're going to get people exceeding numeric effluent limits even when they've addressed the discharge to the maximum extent practicable. In other words, they're going to have to do more than what is maximally practicable to comply with this permit. Probably not possible. Just to summarize, as a matter of compromise, I think it's an easy fix to adopt the errata sheet on the numeric effluent limits. Numeric effluent limits are not required by federal law. You don't have to include them in a permit. You'd be the first board, essentially, to do so. And the board has ample discretion to adopt the errata sheet before you adopt the permit. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's check to see if the mic is working at... Okay. Richard Montevideo. Why don't you go ahead? We'll just have to do the best we can without...
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Richard Montevideo with the law firm Vertan & Tucker on behalf of the City of Dana Point with the City of Dana Point City Attorney's Office. I do have a PowerPoint presentation which if I could get a little assistance in getting up on the screen. And I also have an extra copy for the record. Yes.
Is your PowerPoint presentation just a continuation of the one we saw earlier? Is it part of that?
Right there, yes. The answer is it is.
Right. It's separate from the... Okay.
What happened, if the chair may recall from the last meeting, there was a number of questions about some of the legal issues that were raised. It kind of covers old ground, but only in the sense of the focus of this is to address some of the issues raised in the November 5, 2009 memo from the Office of Chief Counsel. So that's the primary focus of it. And this is only focusing on the one issue of NELs.
Well, that's what we just heard, right?
You heard part of the story. And I'm going to hopefully tell you the other part of the story. What you've heard so far with respect to NELs is the fact that NELs are not required by federal law. And we would agree with that, and I have some additional support for that conclusion. But why is that significant? The reason it's significant is because if NELs are not required by federal law, that means that you then have to comply with the requirements of state law before you can adopt these NEL requirements. And I'd like to put some perspective on what that means in terms of complying with state law and look briefly at what you have before you to argue, in a sense, that what you have before you is not consistent with state law. So the gist of the presentation, my presentation, is to say NDLs are not required by federal law. Because they're not required by federal law, there are a number of state law provisions that do apply. Those state law provisions, namely Water Code Sections 13241, 13000, and with respect to monitoring, Sections 13225C and 13267B must be complied with. But yet when you look at your permit that's before you, or even the fact sheet, there aren't findings that show compliance with these water code sections, and there isn't evidence to support the findings. Of course, you have to have findings to support the terms of the permit, otherwise the permit would be legally defective, and you have to have evidence to support any findings that you may make. So that's the, in a nutshell, the gist of the presentation. Beyond what counsel for the county has expressed, that the Clean Water Act clearly does not require NELs in a MS4 permit, there's other support for that proposition. To begin with, I have in front of you some quotes from the existing permit. And the existing permit provides that the co-permittees are required to implement or require the implementation of BMPs to the MEP standard for all discharges from the MS4s. So your existing permit, which presumably was consistent with state and federal law at the time, it was adopted in 2002, clearly indicates that the requirement is MEP for discharges from the MS4. Doesn't specify, distinguish between dry weather and wet weather. It says all discharges, the co-permittees have to comply with the MEP standard for all discharges from the MS4. Nothing about NELs. NELs is a new term. Similarly, with respect to discharges into the MS4, again, doesn't distinguish between the alleged non-stormwater or dry weather versus wet weather. It says it's the MEP standard. So whether it's going into the MS4 or coming out of the MS4, the existing permit says it's MEP, nothing about NELs. Beyond the language we have in the existing permit and beyond the discussion that we just heard from counsel for the county that the Clean Water Act says MEP, we also have your November 5, 2009 memo, which we just got at the end of last week is the first time I've seen this memo. But the memo actually supports the fact that that NELs are not required under federal law. This is a quote from towards the top of page 5 of this November 5 memo from the Office of Chief Counsel. Quote, while water quality-based effluent limits expressed as numeric effluent limits are not required in the italics, which is actually in the original, to be imposed on dry weather, non-stormwater discharges from the MS4, it is legally permissible to do so. That may be the case that it's legally permissible to do so, but the point of the matter is, you then have to comply with state law. And I'll get into in a minute what state law means. But the next point on this slide that's in front of you, at the bottom of page 5 of this November 5 memo, actually tells the board, this is the Office of Chief Counsel, tells the board what it means if it's not required by federal law. Quote, while the Burbank decision does require an analysis of Water Code Section 13241 factors, when the state adopts permit conditions that are more stringent than federal law, it then goes on to say that the tentative order reflects that all the challenge provisions are required to implement federal law. 2 points here. First, there's a concession at the outset on page 5 that numeric effluent limits are not required by federal law. Then, secondly, Chief Counsel makes our point. If it's not required by federal law, the Burbank decision, which is a California Supreme Court decision, says you got to comply, consider the factors under Section 13241. Then the sentence concludes that the tentative order reflects that all of the challenge provisions are required to implement federal law. I don't know how to explain the inconsistency there, but I do know that the first statement at the top of page 5 of this memo is accurate. As we heard from the county, that NELs are not required by federal law. So what does that mean? Well, what that means is, and we look back at the Burbank decision, which was just quoted in the November 5 memo, first, the Burbank decision confirms, and this is a quote at the top of this slide, which is slide 4, that the Clean Water Act reserves to the states significant aspects of water quality policy and does not restrict the factors that a state may consider when exercising the reserved authority. In Burbank, the Supreme Court actually concluded that if, in that case, it was an numeric effluent limit that applied to a POTW, the court concluded that if NELs are not required by federal law, then, in fact, you have to meet the requirements of Water Code Sections 13241. Specifically, the court concluded that you have to consider the discharger's cost of compliance under state law. Beyond the discussion that we just were looking at in the November 5 memo, there's also a discussion of order number 2009-08, which came down in August of 2009. So this order came down after our last hearing before this board on a tentative permit. This particular order was used in a November 5 memo that's before you as justification for including NELs. But I would point out several reasons why this order is not controlling and frankly not relevant to the discussion at this point in time. First, the 2009-08 order doesn't even discuss compliance with sections 13241, 13000, or 13225 and 13267. There's not even a mention of those sections in here. So clearly it's not controlling on that issue. Secondly, that order actually deals with an adopted TMDL for bacteria. It doesn't deal with a new numeric limit that's outside of a TMDL that's being added to a permit for the first time. And then finally, that particular order is actually not a final order because it has been challenged by the County of Los Angeles through a writ of mandate action that's been filed in LA Superior Court. Finally, what I would say about that order, the conclusion of that order actually is very informative because it talks about the fact that whether you have numeric limits for stormwater versus non-stormwater discharges, the State Board concluded that it's not necessarily a different analysis. It then goes on to make a statement that what you really have to look at are the, quote, findings supporting either numeric or non-numeric effluent limitations contained in the permit. So that's really the issue. What are your findings in this permit that show compliance with state law? All right, state law provides that you have to, and this is consistent with the Burbank decision and consistent with what we just saw from your chief counsel's memo, you have to consider certain factors when you're adopting NPDES permits. Two of those factors are the water quality conditions, can they reasonably be achieved? And we would submit that NELs at this point in time, as we just heard partly from Richard Boone, they cannot reasonably be achieved. Secondly, what are the economic impacts from imposing these NELs? This is what state law requires that you consider. This is what state law requires that you have evidence in the record to support findings, and beyond the findings that you then, that those, that your permit terms are consistent with the findings. In addition to Water Code Section 13241, we have Water Code Section 13000, which was also quoted in the Burbank decision. Again, there's a requirement under state law that you impose reasonable requirements. And secondly, that you again consider the economic impacts. This is under 13241 as well as under Section 13000. Beyond that, we have Water Code Section 13225, which in effect says if you're going to impose monitoring or reporting requirements on local agencies, and this concerns then the monitoring, the additional monitoring requirements that are being imposed upon the permittees to comply with the NELs, that you in effect have to do a cost-benefit analysis. But it's that requirement of conducting a cost-benefit analysis is not only in Section 13225C, it's also in Section 13267. And 13267 actually goes on to say you have to have your conclusions in writing. So, what are the findings that's in this that are in this permit that show compliance with the Water Code Section 13241, 13000, and 13225 and 67? I read through it. I didn't find any findings by this board to support imposing NELs and to show that the factors required under Sections 13241 and 13000 and 13225 and 13267 have been complied with. There's nothing, there's no findings in your permit to support the inclusion of the NELs in compliance with state law. And that is obviously a fatal flaw with the terms of the permit. Now, what evidence is there to show that you did some kind of economic analysis or that you looked at the reasonable achievability of these NELs? Well, I did find an economic discussion in your fact sheet. This economic discussion, for the most part, was just talking about prior cost figures that were developed in connection with other permits and other terms. And what we heard today is that this is the only permit in the state that anyone is aware of that includes NELs. So relying upon old data of permits that do not have NELs to support NELs in this permit obviously is, it would be arbitrary. And what does this, your evidence in terms of this fact sheet, what does it provide to support the inclusion of NELs? Well, first off, I would point out that at the outset, what we heard from your staff is that this permit represents a major shift in your focus. The focus was on permittees' activities, but now it is on environmental outcomes. And so what's the economic analysis that we've seen in the record? Well, the economic analysis is that the vast majority of the costs incurred are not new, because the vast majority of the terms apparently are not new. It goes on to say that any increase in costs of the co-permittees will be incremental in nature. And beyond that, since the 2009 permit, quote, fine-tunes the requirements of the 2002 permit, these cost increases are expected to be modest. Well, if you remember from the slide I showed you earlier from the Burbank decision, you actually have to look at the discharger's cost of compliance. There isn't anything in here that does that, and there are no findings, nor evidence anywhere in the record before you that shows compliance with Water Code Sections 13241 and 13000, nor with the monitoring requirements, the cost-benefit analysis as required under 13225C and 13267. Without those findings showing that these NELs are reasonably achievable, and showing the economic impacts, and showing that you've done a cost-benefit analysis, and without evidence supporting the findings, we would submit that the permit is flawed, and that those provisions should be excluded from the permit. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Just before I want you to stop the clock for a minute. In terms of time management, Ms. Skorpanich, we've had four speakers running about 11 minutes each, and we still have five speakers. Well, we include Assistant City Engineer, City of San Clemente, and the Council of Lake Forest. That's seven speakers. So they're going to have to cut their comments short to keep it within the 60 minutes. And then we have another, this is Orange County Coast Keeper. Well, they're not part of your organized presentation.
Our presentation is five speakers, one after the other, so we'll be...
At 3 minutes each.
Okay, but we do have... I thought you were speaking for all the co-permittees, and I have a couple more here from Lake Forest and San Clemente that I assume you were speaking for.
They're talking about different issues. We're going to concentrate on the NEL.
No, but are they co-permittees?
Yes, they are.
Okay, well, I thought your organized presentation for all of the co-permittees.
The comments that Lake Forest and Elisa Viejo are intending to make can be limited to no more than 3 minutes.
Yeah, I'm not trying to be argumentative. I'm trying to help manage your time for you.
We kind of took this presentation out. Okay. I mean, we could have put them all together, but we kind of broke it to concentrate on different things.
Mr. King, though, does have a question. We stopped the clock. Mr. King does have a question for the previous speaker.
I do want to try and nail down the legal analysis of the NEL numeric limits here. The link between the fact that numeric limits are not expressly required under federal law, but I want to understand the statement that the tentative order reflects that all of the challenged provisions are required to implement federal law. Just help me, which sections of the tentative order demonstrate that the particular numeric limits that are at issue here are required under federal law?
Let me back up. Non-stormwater discharges I disagree with some of the commenters. I do not believe they're subject to the MEP standard, but they're required to be effectively prohibited, or if they are authorized, they need to comply with meet water quality standards, and in this case, I believe they need to meet water quality standards through compliance with water quality-based effluent limits, because there's evidence in the record that the discharges have reasonable potential to cause or contribute to exceedances of water quality standards. So I believe they are required by federal law. Not water quality-based effluent limits are required by federal law. They need not be expressed as numeric limits as they are in the permit. They could be expressed as narrative limits, but they are in the permit as written, which is why my memo concludes that they are not required to be implemented as numeric limits. But I disagree that they are being implemented under state law.
I understand that we're not looking at the maximum extent practicable, but the conclusion that all the challenge provisions are required to implement federal law, the challenge provisions could actually be structured differently, as you just said. They could be a narrative limit. They don't have to necessarily be a quantitative limit in order to be effectively prohibit non-stormwater?
Well, that's correct. Okay. The numeric limits are not required by federal law, but limits are required by federal law.
Okay.
We're going to take a 10-minute break. Our stenographer has a pained expression on her face, so we need to give her a break. And we've stopped the clock, and we'll get back with Mr. Mazboudi. Yeah. Thank you. Did you bring your sleeping bag?
Yeah. So I brought three. I want that.
testing.
Well, this
and
is
then, and then I'll funnel the wires down. So
that's still going to happen.
Yeah. All right.
Good.
You're a good guy.
I didn't fix it.
I don't care what anybody says.
Frank fixed it. Frank fixed it.
Well, thank you, Frank.
Oh, you haven't met Frank?
What a good friend.
That's good. Frank is the he's staff in the enforcement.
I wanted to say hi.
What are you here for? The item of the
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was Frank,
the guy with the beer?
He doesn't know that. That's his day of voice from Sacramento.
Oh, that's why he was talking about this
problem.
Oh, Jeremy. He works with Jeremy.
Jeremy is
must be doing something good.
If we come out to the site, Frank said we should go to the site. Frank said we should go to something really wrong.
All right. I had a council meeting till midnight.
Why did you have to do that?
I have two ordinances that I'm doing. One on food facilities on food, and one I'm putting a photovoltaic. One is on photovoltaic. I handle both environmental programs, probably, and then just control the
air.
I'm sorry?
Air.
Air. Fish. Have a lot of money.
You got a picture of when was that picture you were wearing the suit?
Scanner plan.
The dog suit. Stormwater fair.
We had our educating people have dogs. We had a dog suit. This was like a shot. Lisa, I'm going to keep this here.
So have we given them the presentation and the backup yet?
I gave them the copy.
So they have the copy.
Yeah, they have it. And I'm keeping this here for you.
Yeah, that won't eat up our time.
So Jimmy, how are we going to deal with health and their problems?
Yeah, and that's why I asked Mike for Mike was gone. This property has a GIS view of the 30-acre property. I like to see that on the two 11x17s or 2.5x17s, so that because the property is so long and skinny, that if you put it on one sheet, you can't see it, it's too tiny. So I, because I want to hear what's going on here.
Well, I'm starting my thoughts.
We'll call the meeting back to order.
We'll talk.
Yeah. I'm looking for Mr. Oh, there he is, Mr. Rayfield.
Leave it alone.
Before we begin and start the clock, I just want everybody out there to know that at 5:30 we're going to lose Mr. Luker. He has family obligations that trump everything, and this is very important. So just keep that in mind. So, Mr. Mazbudi, we're going to start the clock.
All right.
We have 17 minutes to go in this organized presentation and many speaker slips.
We'll be very quick. I just want to say that I'm a local government environmental advocate. I believe we are all environmental groups in here, so hopefully you look at us as such. So what's the problem with NEL? I'm not going to cover any of the technical stuff, but we're going to talk about why they are not reasonably achievable. Well, one, because natural background and uncontrollable sources. The other thing that the reason why they're not achievable is investigations, a lot of time, are very inconclusive. Discharges are only controllable to maximum extent practicable. We've known that also with some structural treatment that we've done that also barely meets some of these NELs proposed. In addition, costs for monitoring, investigating, controlling, and penalties are huge. So there are smarter ways, and this presentation, hopefully, myself and my colleagues will show you that there are smarter ways. The NEL standard is flawed and guarantees failure. These are some of the constituents that we have to monitor for, and on the first column you see some of our current dry weather monitoring data, and we have exceeded the proposed NEL almost 97% of the time in some of them. But if you look at some of the Orange County coastal reference streams, well, there also the exceedances vary from 30 to 90% of the time, and even SCORP's reference areas all exceed them about half of the time. So these are some pristine streams here, and they exceed the NEL. So all of these have uncontrollable natural source components. The soil is high in phosphorus. Sometimes that's why it's giving us high phosphorus. Nitrogen is abundant from air, geology, and decaying vegetation. We are all too familiar with the bacteria problem. We're doing all kind of studies to show where the bacteria is coming from, and sometimes we can't even pinpoint that. Investigation outcome A is futile. Page 22, C1A says, determine that it is natural, non-anthropogenically influenced in origin and conveyance. Well, that's impossible and sets us up for failure and unintended consequences such as mandatory minimum penalties and third-party lawsuits. When we chatted with the regional board staff, they told us, well, you might have an area that's natural, but since you put a pipe, maybe under a bridge, to now the water, you focus it so it's not natural anymore. Well, how can we meet both? So it's either natural, but even when it's natural, we're told if we improve and urbanize, now it's not natural anymore. Well, that's a problem for us. It's concentration-based limits, and it's flawed. You know, it doesn't take into consideration load at all. So if I have a trickle coming from a pipe, or if I have hundreds of gallons per minute coming out of another pipe, they're treated the same, and it doesn't give me the flexibility to prioritize where I could focus my attention on. So there's no recognition of frequency of exceedance. There's no recognition of outfall location or impact, where it's impacting. No recognition of number of constituents that are exceeded. So one size does not fit all, and no ability to prioritize whatsoever. Okay, next.
Brad Fowler, City of Dana Point. Investigating dry weather exceedances is a daunting task. Here's a map of Dana Point showing our public storm drain inlets and outlets. What this shows you is not only those, but the 11,000 source parcels for even a small city that can be the source of dry weather flow. Next. So if we extrapolate that onto the South County region, across the acreage, we find that now we're up over 500,000 potential sources, or close to 500,000 potential sources for this dry weather flow. Therefore, such a multitude of sources of water that are for all intents and purposes dry weather flow is a non-point source and can only be controlled by MEP. Next. Now, this slide shows you in Dana Point. Is this the next slide, or did we skip one? Okay, next. While the concept of prioritizing dry weather flow sounds simple and reasonable, the practical reality is different. And here's an example of the challenges of pinpointing a non-point dry weather source. What you see here is a typical subdrain area in the city of Dana Point. It's about 1,000 homes. A freeway runs across it through here, and there's three parks. It's only 1% of the city, but we have some dry weather flow, as you see here. Next. So I sent a staff member, to look out over these sources, and guess what we find? We find that there's a multitude of variable and hidden sources. For example, this first one here is an exempted natural water discharge from groundwater drainage of underground French drains used to prevent landslides, viewable only by camera because it's underground and inside a pipe. Here, we've got groundwater seepage coming out of a slope that comes into the catch and flows down the street here. Here we've got the ubiquitous curb cuts. Are they groundwater or over irrigation? We have both. Here you've got a place in town where we've got groundwater that's coming out of the street, coming down and into the catch basin. Now, inside that catch basin, there's pipes coming in here also. And these pipes are, again, allowable from sources such as groundwater or perhaps from a landscaped area clear up the street or up the slope. But you can't see those when you're out there trying to track down this problem. And then, of course, we've got residential car washing, which is currently exempted, that comes up periodically. Next, please. Now, in this drainage area, I sent one of our staff members out, and over 3 days here, you can see, I said, go see what you can find for dry weather flow. In the first one, you've got 19 places, the second one, 9, the next one, 11. There's over 40 locations out here, 30 of which are different locations. And guess what? How do you pinpoint that source? That's what is so difficult here in eliminating all sources. It makes it unachievable. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm Joe Ames with the City of Mission Viejo. I'm here to tell you that numeric effluent limits will cause monitoring expenses to increase dramatically. Here's an example right here. Our current testing program calls for $420 per site, give or take. The new testing program will cost over $1,000. That's an increase of 140%, and that is not cost neutral. Next, please. We have more things to test. We have 16 constituents for runoff from outfalls to inland and surface waters, 5 constituents for runoff from outfalls to to harbors and lagoons, and 3 constituents for runoff from outfalls to surf zones. Next. And that's not all of the testing. Attachment E to the tentative order describes dry weather testing that talks about 38 constituents needing to be tested at NEL outfalls, and these extra 22 tests are for informational purposes only, and have nothing to do with assessing NEL compliance. Next, please. On top of that, the NEL dry weather testing period has been expanded in the tentative order to require double the amount of time for testing. Instead of 6 months, it requires 12 months. That's an increase of 50% of the time that we are monitoring outfalls. Next, please. What does this all lead to? An increase of 260% for this one program alone to $360,000 per year, and that excludes investigative costs, and the wet weather monitoring program, which we just described to you, is an additional cost of $420,000, give or take, in the first year, and over $300,000 in each subsequent year. So my question is where is the cost-benefit analysis, as mentioned by Richard Montevideo? Next, please. We are appealing to your good judgment to require cost-effective monitoring in this permit, make extra informational testing optional, and to confine testing to high recreational use periods consistent with other regions by adopting the county errata sheet.
Thank you. Lisa Zawoski.
I'm Lisa Zawoski. I work for the city of Dana Point, and I took the oath. Investigations are cost prohibitive at all sites. I have two examples shown up there. One is the Aliso Creek outfall. After 4.5 years and 320,000, we still don't have all the answers. Another example is a metal study in San Juan Creek. After a year and $30,000, we were able to show that we concluded that high metal levels were the result of natural geology in an uncontrollable source. Change slide, please. The NAL program, it requires us to investigate each and every exceedance with no consideration for magnitude or priority. With potentially 480 outfalls and an average investigation cost of $175,000, this amounts to $84 million. Therefore, we recommend the non-stormwater action levels as provided in the errata. Next, please. Another new program element is the irrigation runoff prohibition. The staff indicates that they don't anticipate any extra costs, and we disagree. We use the word reduce here because in the real world, we will not be able to completely eliminate runoff from irrigation, but we can and will control to the MEP, the maximum extent practicable. There are various magnitudes of over-irrigation that occur 24/7 at thousands of locations every day. Additional staff serving as water cops, even during night hours, will be needed. This cost we estimate at $3 million a year in our region. To address the runoff issues that are identified, we know from the state-funded study that we have tools such as smart timers and irrigation retrofits that can significantly reduce the runoff, but these come as a cost that we estimate at $22 million. Next slide. After the monitoring costs and investigation costs and our best efforts to reduce runoff, we will need to implement treatment BMPs to attempt to meet the NELs. Real-world examples include the media filters and diversions that have been implemented at Baby Beach and the parking lot in Dana Point. Using an average cost of these projects at $900,000 each, if we have to treat all the outfalls in our region, it could cost up to $432 million plus an extra $10 million annually to maintain these systems. As you can see, these potential costs to implement the NELs alone are staggering and would more than consume our availability of water quality funding.
Nancy Palmer, welcome.
Thank you, Nancy Palmer, City of Laguna Niguel. I took the oath. In the interest of time, I am not going to try to add up these numbers that you have just had presented to you. Mainly, I've come to plead with you today about the single biggest wild card cost that cities are concerned about. By allowing numeric effluent limits to be defined at end of pipe, under the law, you are setting cities up for exposure to mandatory minimum penalties. It's our understanding that under the state's water quality enforcement policy, mandatory penalties would be calculated at $2 per gallon of discharge. If numeric effluent limits had been in place 10 years ago, when cleanup and abatement order number 99211 for bacteria in the GO3 PO2 outfall was issued to my city, Laguna Niguel, the mandatory minimum penalty for that one outfall would have been about $260,000 a day. That pipe is still not in strict compliance today, despite our best efforts and over $1 million of expenditure to get it there. Pending your decision today, there are 480 outfalls potentially out of compliance tomorrow in South Orange County. No city can afford to risk incurring even one of those mandatory penalties, which would rapidly devour our entire water quality program budgets and then chew into other essential city services even in the best of economic years. I know you as board members would fully intend to be fair and reasonable before wielding this tool for enforcement. But by defining numeric effluent limits in such a narrowly simplistic and perfectionist ways, please realize that they could quickly become a sort of weapon of mass destruction in the hands of any individual inclined to file a third-party lawsuit. In case you think I'm kind of hyperventilating here, let me remind you that the threat of a third-party lawsuit against the regional board for failure to enforce its permit was a key factor in pushing the issuance of that cleanup and abatement order 10 years ago. I don't think any of us wants to take those risks. Today, you have the power and the opportunity to take a wiser course. Instead of imposing numeric effluent limits that are not reasonably achievable, adopt numeric or narrative action levels for non-stormwater discharge in their place. The county has already submitted proposed errata language that would enable you to do that today if you chose. Non-stormwater action levels recognize that the real world is complex and our knowledge about it is imperfect. They provide you and us the flexibility to exercise judgment, prioritize problems, and focus resources where they can be effective. If you make only one change in the permit today, I ask you to please make it this one. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Gopanich, did you have any kind of a summary for your group?
Have one final secret.
Oh, you do? I must have missed that.
Mr. Chair, I'm Tom Bondigat with the City of San Clemente.
Oh, okay.
And I will be.
We didn't have you as part of that organized presentation, but go ahead.
Okay.
Your time is just about up.
Okay. Then I'm just going to do cleanup and suggest some fixes to some issues, and then hopefully we can move on. Regarding irrigation runoff, you've heard a lot about it, but I think there's common ground that we can move on from. Your board staff has already indicated orally and in writing in the fact sheet that their preferred approach for compliance is coordination with water agencies, and we absolutely agree. So weirdly, we're just asking you, why can't we just have the permit say that? The errata sheet that the county provided has a proposed text. It's one sentence that I'll read, and we're proposing that if you leave the irrigation exemptions in there as they are now and simply add a new provision, B5, that would say each co-permittee shall coordinate with the water purveyor or purveyors within its jurisdiction to develop and implement a work plan that results in a coordinated water conservation and landscape irrigation runoff reduction program to prevent landscape irrigation runoff and minimize the conveyance of pollutants to the MS4. If we do that, we can move on. It really meets what your board staff have told us. Second, regarding the retrofitting, this is an even easier fix that we could live with and move on. If we could change the two mentions of co-permittee to permittees, that basically gives us the flexibility to pool our resources and look at a retrofitting program for existing development on a regional watershed basis. I think that would be much more cost-effective approach. And the county, again, has suggested the strikeout. Really simple, has absolutely no change in the meaning or the intent of what the board staff want. And finally, on the BMP maintenance tracking requirement, we respectfully suggest that we implement this change on a go-forward basis instead of retroactive to 2001. It's one matter to go forward and implement all that new data collection and inspection requirement. It's entirely another matter to go back some 8 years and go through all that data. More importantly, I think it's unnecessary because in our current permit, we've already implemented or verified implementation of water quality management plans. And those plans include language that require the property owners or responsible parties to provide proper operation and maintenance of all the BMPs identified therein. And we've reported that in our annual reports. So, again, I don't see the value in going back, but we could live with going forward and adding that in and incorporate that and plan for that. So respectfully request you make those changes, and then we can forget about those issues and move on. Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Gopanich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Hold on.
Is there a question?
Grant.
Did the last speaker take the oath? Did he say that?
He didn't, but...
statement about your oath.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I did take your oath.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate your offer to make wrap-up comments, but if I might reserve a minute when all the other testimony has been received, I would appreciate that.
Okay. Andre Monette. Now we're starting.
Good evening, Chair Wright, members of the board. Andre Monette on behalf of the cities of Lake Forest and Aliso Viejo. We'll keep this brief in the interest of time. If you won't hold this against me, though, I would like to take one moment to thank Mr. Robertus for his service on the board. I understand this is his last meeting and my last opportunity to address him as executive officer. So almost two decades of service is very admirable. And so thank you. And disregard that as far as my comments go here. I just want to make two points. A lot has been made of the distinction between dry weather and wet weather flows, and we fully support the county's comments to that end and the City of Dana Point's comments to that end. I think what needs to be brought up is the issue of what the MEP standard is, maximum extent practical. It was implemented by Congress in 1987 when they were revamping the Clean Water Act, and it was the only standard that was applied to municipal discharges. All of the regulations, case law reflects that it's a lower standard than the technological standard that's applied to traditional discharges. And the real reason for that is the issue of control over what comes into and out of your system. If you're a private property owner, you clearly have the ability to regulate what goes on your property and what comes into your property in a lot more succinct way than you do if you're a public entity. And I think that should be reflected in the permits, and it is reflected in the MS4 permits for the most part. When you start changing that standard, as that's being done with the numeric effluent limits in this permit, it really eviscerates the language of the Clean Water Act, but as well as the intent of Congress. And for that reason, it's our position that the numeric effluent limits should be removed, and any references to this distinction between non-stormwater and stormwater should be removed, again, because everything that comes out of the pipe is subject to that MEP discharge. The second comment that I have is on the issue of consistency. We represent Lake Forest and Aliso Viejo, but Lake Forest is one of those agencies that split jurisdictionally. The jurisdictional line between the Santa Ana Regional Board and the San Diego Regional Board is roughly through the middle of Lake Forest. So when you're looking at really those four issues that Ben had up on his presentation are pretty important. We're looking at irrigation, retrofit requirements, stormwater action levels, and numeric effluent limits. Conceivably, there's some property owner in there who half of his lawn is going to be subject to the over-irrigation requirements, the other half isn't. There's been some efforts to make things jurisdictionally consistent, but in light of my first comment on the MEP standard, I think what's important and what I would ask the board to do is look at those areas where they're inconsistent and what are we getting out of that. With the numeric effluent limits, are you getting a pragmatic approach, an approach that benefits water quality at the same time as getting people there, or are you getting an approach that is punitive and exposes everybody to liability without necessarily benefiting water quality? So I think we should look at, I would request that the board looks at each of those issues. And that's all I have. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. I have four speakers left. I think we'll finish off the Orange County group. Colin Kelly, Claudio Padres, Vico Allen, and Mark Corey. So if you could come up in that order. Colin Kelly. Well, actually, you're not part of the...
I'm an environmental group, so...
Okay, well, we'll hold off on you. Claudio Padres.
Also not an Orange County permittee.
Yeah, but you're with...
I'm with Riverside County Flood
Control. I understand that. You're part of Riverside County Flood Control. Yes, we'll...
You'd like me to hold off?
Yeah, I guess. Regulatory manager contact. Vico Allen.
Yes, I'm also not with the county.
Okay. How about Mark Corey?
I think it's Mark Gray, and I'm not with the county either, sir.
Oh, it is great. Excuse me. Okay. Marianne, do you want to... Ms. Skorpanich, why don't you wrap up now? Because we have a bunch of other speaker slips that I don't think are part of any of your groups.
Whatever's the pleasure of the board. I want to thank you for listening very carefully. I hope that we were able to convey to you how important these issues are and how earnestly we do really want to try to protect resources and our water resources and put our financial resources to the most effective way that we can get that job done. I did want to comment on something that was in staff's presentation, that the first three permit terms that we've had are really been characterized by activities by the permittees, and it's only going forward that we're going to affect any pollutant reduction. And I would argue that we have been affecting pollutant reduction for a number of years through our programs and very effectively doing so. In fact, in our annual report every year, we characterize in each one of those sections of our compliance activity reporting those which get at changing behavior, those at which get at reducing loads of pollutants, and those that work at restoring those beneficial uses. So I would like to add that to the record as well. We have offered this set of fixes, if you will, this errata sheet, in an effort to come up with a compromise solution to a number of areas that we find just would not be effective in us being able to reduce pollutants and protect our waterways. And so we hope you take that into consideration. And it really is offered in the spirit of wanting to get the job done in the most effective way possible.
Okay. Thank you very much. At this time, I think we need to hear from EPA. Is EPA representative here?
Good evening, Chairman Wright and board members. My name is John Kemmerer, and I have taken the oath earlier this afternoon. I'm an associate director of the Water Division in EPA Region 9. As you may know, our Region 9 covers the states of California, Arizona, Nevada, and Hawaii and the Pacific Island territories. And I'm here today to express EPA's strong support for the adoption of this permit today. I'd first like to start off by just a little background on our involvement in stormwater. Over the past few years, we've been actively working with regional boards across the state of California on the renewal of municipal stormwater permits. We decided to get into these permits for a number of reasons. First of all, monitoring data has shown that municipal stormwater is a major cause of water quality impairments in coastal areas, especially here in Southern California. Also, we've been seeing over the past few years, as you're well aware of, many regional boards are working concurrently on renewing MS4 permits. And as Ben alluded to earlier, we did some convening of all the boards together to foster some communication across the regions on how the challenging issues of these MS4 permits would be addressed. And the reason is probably most informative for us for our involvement in these permits is the fact that we've been doing a number of audits of MS4 programs over the past 7 or 8 years. We've audited about 55 different programs across our region, and those are exercises where we go out with the permittees, with the state folks, and look at how the programs are working, and from both a compliance standpoint, determining whether the permits are being complied with, and how effective the permit terms are. And our conclusions based on these audits have been pretty overwhelming that there is a significant need for improvement in the MS4 permits really across our region, and actually I've been finding and talking to my counterparts across the country. And one of the key findings has been that we believe that the permits need to be improved to include clear, measurable, enforceable provisions if we're going to really improve water quality as that's being affected now by municipal stormwater. Back in February of 2008, which was the last time you had an adoption hearing on this permit, we came and actually expressed we were not supportive of the permit before you that day. We expressed concerns of it about the permit primarily because we felt that it did not include clear and measurable and enforceable requirements for the implementation of low-impact development at new and redevelopment projects. Since last February, we have been working very closely with your staff and have been extremely impressed with the improvements that have been made to the permit. We appreciate that the preparation of these permits is extremely resource-intensive for your office and for the permittees, I recognize also. And as a result of your staff's work on this permit, we believe that the The permit being proposed for adoption today is among the best of the renewed permits across the state of California, and there are several specific aspects that I want to highlight and commend in the permit. First are the low-impact development provisions, and these really are clear, measurable, and enforceable requirements. They're consistent with the basic approach taken by the Santa Ana Board for the northern portion of Orange County. I would disagree with the comments earlier from the county that the inclusion of the without runoff clause makes it somehow different. Both permits require the use of these LID tools to retain a specified volume of stormwater. The volume is the same in both permits based on this, the definition of the capture volume. And we really see this as consistent with both the Orange County permit and other permits that are being adopted around the state. And I really believe that these provisions provide a valuable framework for reducing pollution at the source and in order to protect water quality. You've heard a lot of other benefits about LID for groundwater conservation and reducing our reliance on importing water from Northern California. I guess I can't really overemphasize the importance of incorporating these LID provisions into the permit. I also think it contains a really creative and reasonable approach for beginning to evaluate how LID can be promoted via retrofitting of existing developments. Ultimately, these retrofits, where they're feasible and practical, will likely be necessary if we're going to restore water quality impacted by municipal stormwater. Now I'll get to the big issue on this permit, it seems, is the inclusion of these numeric effluent limits for non-stormwater discharges. And as was stated earlier, we are in support of the language in the permit for the these numeric effluent limits. The limits are consistent with the Clean Water Act's requirement that municipal stormwater permits effectively prohibit non-stormwater discharges. And I think I heard one of the speakers say that the MEP standard applies throughout. I would disagree. The provision on prohibiting non-stormwater discharges is in a separate section of the Clean Water Act. I agree with your council's recent analysis that laid out the legal authority for regulating non-stormwater discharges. In your council's report, there's a reference to the recent California State Board conclusions about the LA County MS4 permit. As you may know, and there was reference in the county's presentation also, that recently there was a challenge to the inclusion of numeric limits for non-stormwater discharges in that LA permit. We followed this petition closely, and in a June 3rd letter from my boss, Alexis Strauss, we supported the inclusion of the numeric limits in the LA County. In that letter from Alexis, the point she made was that it's the reason we supported them is that, you know, because these discharges are subject to the prohibition of non-stormwater discharges to the MS4. So I think if you want to get into that issue a little bit more, you should probably talk to Catherine Hagan. I think her analysis of this is on the mark. We strongly agree with the State Board's August 4th conclusions in this matter, in which the State Board agreed that the inclusion of numeric limits for dry weather discharges in the LA County MS4 permit was appropriate. Moving on, we also support the permit's use of the stormwater action levels. I didn't hear much about that, but I think that's a really great step forward. It's a reasonable way to determine the effectiveness of stormwater controls and to get a necessary better understanding of stormwater dischargers and support the direction your staff are headed to achieve measurable results. And then finally, I just want to mention that we believe the permit's incorporation of TMDL that EPA recently approved for the Baby Beach and Dana Point Harbor is consistent with EPA's policies and the Clean Water Act, and this approach is also consistent with what was done for addressing municipal waste load allocations in the Santa Ana Regional Board's Orange County permit. So I'm going to conclude there, and I urge you to take a big step forward today in the protection of water quality in the San Diego region by adopting this permit, and thanks for giving me the chance to speak.
Thank you very much. Gabriel Salmer just indicated that she wishes to register support but does not need to speak. Thank you, Gabe. Penny Alaya, followed by Jack Eidt, E-I-D-T.
I'd like them to have them all in their hand at one time. Thank you. Good evening. I took the oath. I'm Penny Alia, and I'm with the Sierra Club, here today to once again strongly support the adoption of a genuinely effective MS4 permit that focuses on environmental outcomes and not claimed financial crisis by the co-permittees. The EPA couldn't have said it better for us. We are talking about the destruction of irreplaceable coastal wetlands and ocean resources due to an inadequate MS4 permit. Now that's a real crisis. Arguments to perpetuate and allow ongoing water pollution are no longer acceptable. In compliance with your request, I will not repeat what I have been saying for over 3.5 years. Water quality laws and regulations are not intended to be implemented for the convenience of co-permittees, inland water districts, and their partners among the residential development and building industries. Dry weather MS4 discharges are directly attributable to the collective practices of these entities and constitute an industrial wastewater byproduct from known point sources. Removing harmful dry weather urban runoff water quality constituents and elevated flows is possible through your aggressive leadership. Please listen to the EPA. Adopt this permit today. And the reason that I passed those around, do any of you gentlemen know what those are? Those are out of the large street sweeper that go through the streets. Those make up the big brushes. That's from last Thursday. One street sweep, my block. That's what we're doing as far as water quality and cleaning up my street in my city. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Eid, and followed by Cindalee Penny Hall.
Good afternoon. My name is Jack Eid with Wild Heritage Planners, and I have taken the oath. And I want to thank you for having this hearing and pushing forward with these requirements. I think they're most necessary. They're obviously necessary because we have seen major development, as has been shown by the cities that have gotten up and made statements, that we have a real problem, and this is a way to address that problem. With regards to non-storm numeric effluent limitation, basically it's an issue endemic to the Mediterranean climate, urbanized with tropical landscaping. And so it's not something that's maybe addressed in the Clean Water Act, but as has been stated, it is necessarily in keeping with the spirit of compliance with the Clean Water Act. And it's necessary. These dry water flows are not something you have in Massachusetts or Alabama, but it's the serious problem that we have here, and it needs to be taken care of. And I appreciate that this is an excellent, positive step forward to deal with that. So also with regard to low-impact development, I think it is laudable that this is involved here. This is the way that we can prohibit this from continuing to be a problem in future generations by dealing with the water at the source of its, where it's causing the problem. That's really what's necessary. How we got all this development approved, we could ask the county and the cities. And with regards to the economic impact, what is the impact to all of us of having a severely degraded ocean as well as environmentally sensitive habitats? There is money to be saved by preserving that water, recycling that water. There's a number of ways to reduce that, and by educating people and getting them on board about making their world a much better place. I think this is a really excellent step, and I fully support it. Thank you very much.
I guess I should have asked you if you'd taken the oath.
I did state that I had taken the oath. I couldn't remember.
My brain is turning to mush here. Cindalee Penny Hall, followed by Lisa Marks.
I've taken the oath. My name is Cindalee Penny Hall. I've heard the previous speakers from the city and county bureaucracy speak, and I'm a taxpayer. I share their concerns about money, but I also get thirsty once in a while, and you can't drink money. With that said, I'm here with the fervent hope that with this permit in place, the chronic illegal discharges from the MS4 storm drains will finally be abated. For too long, we have suffered the hazardous effects of the runoff flowing into our creek and ocean. For too long, this pollution has been allowed to affect human health, aquatic organisms, and the beneficial uses of our receiving waters. The now seriously impaired Aliso Creek watershed is the result of allowing the co-permittees to put off enforcement because they didn't want to pay the price for the impacts they created. That left us, residents and citizens, to pay that price, and we have paid dearly through the years as we watched what was once a clean and vibrant watershed go into decline. There is a saying that goes, "There are those that know the price of everything and the value of nothing." It is time the value of this watershed is remanded in full. Please adopt this MS4 permit as is. Thank you.
Thank you. Lisa Marks, followed by Barbara Metzger.
Hi, my name is Lisa Marks, and I have taken the oath. I'm a resident of Laguna Beach, and I'm a director of the South Laguna Civic Association. I'm here to strongly support the new permit and commend the efforts of the staff and the board towards this. And I live adjacent to the Aliso Creek watershed, and I observe the surreal levels of dry weather flow that come down the creek every day. I completely commend the effort to deter dry weather flows and think that's essential to the preservation of the ocean and the creek. I also strongly support the retrofit of our already very urbanized watershed redevelopment occurs. There's so much we can do with landscape and stormwater catchment, so I totally support those efforts. And lastly, the pollutants flowing into the ocean include so much more than bacteria, so I commend your efforts to control those pollutants. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Barbara Metzger, followed by Charlotte Mazurek.
I'm Barbara Metzger. I've taken the oath. At the first of these hearings that I attended, the EPA representative reminded us all that 20 years of regulation had not improved the quality of the water in Aliso Creek. So if the new regulations are more rigorous than the old ones, there's a good reason for it. I think the public wants clean water, a clean ocean to swim in, and a healthy ocean for marine life. Living on the coast as we do, residents of Laguna have always been concerned about water quality, but a couple of hefty fines from this board seems to have focused our collective attention on doing something about it seriously. We've made a lot of changes, and we've hired specialists to work on water quality full-time, and as a result, our record is much cleaner than it used to be. I anticipate that the new MS4 regulations prohibiting the discharge of excess irrigation water will have a similar effect on the county and the cities upstream. I hope that you'll adopt them today.
Thank you. Charlotte Mazurek, followed by Noah Garrison.
Good afternoon, board members. I have taken the oath. Charlotte Mazurek, resident of Laguna Beach. I am in support of the adoption of this MS4 permit. My husband and I are big supporters of our Blue Belt. We strongly believe in preserving ocean water resources and in preventing ocean pollution. We cannot expect our ocean to continue to take this kind of toxic urban runoff abuse and be able to survive. But I can expect you to protect our ocean and marine resources, and that's why I am here. It is inexcusable that we continue to pollute Aliso Creek and our ocean, especially when we know the public is universally in support of eliminating urban runoff from our coastal waters. The ocean belongs to us all, and a few co-permittees, including the county, should not be allowed to continue to pollute. It's a question of priority, not budget constraints. And we can find the funds if we want to, and we can change our ways if we want to have a healthy Aliso Creek and healthy receiving coastal waters in South Laguna. Finally, after all this time, I have to believe that this permit is watertight. Despite all that we've heard, and in making your decision today, we hope that you will not be pressured by any legal action that these cities and the county may or may not take. Please adopt and enforce this MS4 permit. It's as simple as that. Thank you.
Thank you. Noah Garrison, followed by Colin Kelly.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. This is Catherine. I had intended when I prepared the chair statement, Noah Garrison had requested 10 to 15 minutes, and I was considering NRDC, an environmental group, giving. Right. So hopefully if he needs that time, you'll be
I understand
to.
That, but he's asking for 8 minutes okay. Here, and I'm...
I think given the late hour of the day, I will try not even to equal that amount.
I would greatly appreciate
it. Absolutely.
That.
I actually had a PowerPoint presentation that, given, again, the late hour and people's eye strain, I will refrain from using at this point, just to say that there is suggested language in it should the board wish to look at it. My name is Noah Garrison. I'm with the Natural Resources Defense Council. I have taken the oath today. I do want to start by thanking board staff, who I think throughout this process have been extremely gracious in their willingness to engage with all of the stakeholders and to open a dialogue during the drafting process. It's been greatly appreciated. At the start, there's been a lot of discussion today about the different standards under which the permit is viewed by the Clean Water Act, and I think it's important to remember that a fundamental goal and actually a requirement for all permits is that they be certified to prevent violations of water quality standards, and that's what this permit does. Addressing many of the comments that have been made so far, I'd like to start with the prohibition against lawn irrigation and simply state that while the co-permittees or cities may feel that there are other approaches that would be easier or more practical potentially for them to implement, the Clean Water Act specifically requires that this particular form of discharge be prohibited if it is found to be a source of pollutants to the MS4 system or to waters of the United States. There is no discretion under the Act to allow for a more flexible approach. The approach that's taken in the permit, which is to remove this exemption for lawn irrigation, is appropriate and, in fact, required by the Clean Water Act. Following from that, and related to the non-stormwater discharges, the NELs are also an appropriate means of enforcing the Clean Water Act. While the permittees may say that the only means of enforcing any kind of discharge in the MS4 system is the MEP standard, this ignores the fact that the Clean Water Act requires that non-stormwater discharges must be effectively prohibited from entering the MS4 system. The NEL is simply an allowance. It is a means of assessing whether that is occurring, but the only other alternative for this permit would be to flat out prohibit all non-stormwater discharges from reaching the MS4 system. The NEL simply provides a means of assessing whether or not that is occurring. It is required under the Clean Water Act. It is not a permissible feature of the permit. Following from that, we would like to talk about 2 points in the permit that are both related to biofiltration, that are the only points that we feel should be amended in the permit at this point. And specifically, biofiltration as a means of complying with the LID features of the permit is something we do not feel is appropriate. Biofiltration is a practice that we do not outright oppose. We feel that in many instances it would be preferable to use biofiltration as opposed to conventional controls for the controlling of discharges. However, biofiltration almost by definition cannot be as effective as preventing the discharge of pollutants to the MS4 system as on-site retention. With on-site retention, you are preventing all water and, as a result, all pollutants in that water from mobilizing and leaving a site in the first place. Biofiltration will allow some quantum of water to leave a site and enter the MS4 system, and it will take with it some quantum of pollutants. By definition, it is not as protective as water quality, and to allow it to substitute for the on-site retention features does not meet the MEP standard as a result. Our suggestion would be that anywhere that the permit does allow, in cases of infeasibility, to use biofiltration in place of on-site retention, that it should also trigger the off-site waiver provisions, that the permittees should be required to whatever volume is treated through biofiltration, they should also have to treat off-site using the LID waiver provision. Added to this, we also do not see any reason why, as the current the permit is currently set up, a permittee or a developer should have to find that biofiltration is infeasible in order to participate in the LID waiver program. As the LID provisions are currently set up, there's a tiered approach to addressing stormwater discharges. The first is to retain water on site. If that is found to be infeasible, the permittee or developer may then use biofiltration, and only when that is found to be infeasible can they participate in the LID waiver program. We feel that as soon as on-site retention has been demonstrated to be infeasible, the permittee or developer should be allowed to participate in the waiver program. They should not have to go through the interim step of finding that biofiltration itself is infeasible. I also want to echo the comments of Mr. Kemmerer to state that the permit is an appropriate and, in fact, strongly supported means of addressing stormwater pollution, and that the requirements, the NELs, the on-site retention requirements that provide specific, enforceable, and quantifiable limits are both necessary and, at this point, required under the Clean Water Act. They are being adopted in permits throughout California and, in fact, across the country. These are now the MEP standard, and they should be adopted by this board, and we fully support adoption with the amendments that we've proposed. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Colin Kelly, followed by Claudio Padres.
Good evening. I did take the oath.
Thank you.
And as much as we support the LID principles into the South Orange County MS4 permit, we're also dedicated towards the adoption of a permit which accurately reflects the various LID best management practices in a way which maximizes their utility. And frankly, in today's meeting, the most difficult thing for me to do as a representative coastkeeper is pick whether we were going to choose the red or the green card. And generally, we support the adoption of this program similar to NRDC with some minor adjustments to it. But in general, we support more than 95% of this program, of this MS4 plan. Chief among our concerns is the permit's pervasive reliance on biofiltration without including a workable definition of the term or providing verifiable standards for which biofiltration BMPs must satisfy. Rather, the MS4 permit provides clarity. The permit instead reinforces ambiguity by providing a potentially unworkably vague term which does not guarantee on-site retention. If biofiltration is adopted, which we are not opposed to, then there should be additional guidance on the regional board's definition. Additionally, the regional board should ensure proper oversight of any proposed biofiltration device to guarantee that it is properly sized and designed. Coastkeeper agrees with the regional board that structural, proprietary, and/or engineered biofiltration devices should be permitted where appropriate. However, the board should hold those biofiltration devices to equivalent water quality standards and require proper monitoring to prove their initial and continued effectiveness as pollution control devices. Finally, Coastkeeper encourages the regional board to view utilization of biofiltration as a trigger for LID offset programs similar to the NRDC. That is the conclusion of our comments.
Thank you. Claudio Padres, followed by Vico Allen, and then Mark Corey.
Hi, my name is Claudio Padres, and I'm from Riverside County Flood Control, and I have taken the oath. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak in front of you today. I want to express that the district generally supports the positions of Orange County and the permittees, especially on two major items. One is the consistency issue, and the other is on the NELs issue. Now, as you may be aware, the district and many of the permittees within Riverside County are confronted with some of the same issues of being split between regional board boundaries, and that creates a big consistency issue. So that's something that we really support their position on. What I'd like to move on to, though, is providing a little bit more context and a little bit higher level, not getting into the details of the NEL issue. Over the past 20 years, roughly, MS4 programs have used ordinances and enforcements for dealing with the effective prohibition for illegal discharges. And this is for good reason, because this was the
system that was originally described in the federal regulations. This permit is completely and uniquely, among other permits, changing this approach by requiring permittees to comply with strict numeric effluent limits. And although the board may have the discretion to do this, the district strongly believes that this is not an appropriate within an MS4 permit. And I'll speak a little bit more about this. NELs have been typically applied in an environment or to an entity that is generating or processing pollutants, such as an industrial plant owner. Through their MPDS permit, they would be required to control their pollutants such that their discharges meet numeric effluent limits. Now, in contrast with MS4 permittees, and in disagreement with some of the comments that we've heard, one example but not the only one was Sierra Club, the permittees are not the ones generating these pollutants and discharges. The public is. And while the permittees, with the consent of the public, can regulate the public, they cannot control their actions. The people have free will, even to the extent, unfortunately, sometimes of breaking the law. They do have that free will. And I like to think of NELs kind of like freeway speed limits. The state can set a speed limit, and the local law enforcement agencies can require compliance with these speed limits, but they cannot outright prevent somebody from speeding. And if somebody does speed, you don't go back and penalize the local law enforcement agency, especially when they've been taking appropriate steps to make sure that people are able to comply with this. But this is exactly what NELs are going to be doing to MS4 permittees. They will directly penalize the permittees, although they have limited ability to control the activities that are causing these discharges. And this is why the federal regulations contemplated the MEP-style approach that's based on ordinances enforcement to address these kind of discharges. Because they realize, and I'm sure you're aware, that success is dependent upon and inexorably tied to the values and behaviors of society as a whole. And since the permittees cannot control society, it doesn't make sense to regulate them as if they can and then penalize them when they can't. I hear the beeping, so I know my time is up. I'll wrap up just with a conclusion that, we appreciate the opportunity to speak in front of you today, and we strongly feel that the NELs are not appropriate for this environment and support the Orange County's proposed revisions to the permit on that.
Thank you. Michael Allen and Mark Gray. Get it right.
Good evening. My name is Vaco Allen, and I did take the oath representing Contech. I'd like to just challenge a couple of, I think are pretty fundamental assumptions, one made in the permit and one just made in testimony a couple of minutes ago, regarding low-impact development, and then talk a little bit about how those assumptions are carried through in the permit in what I view as a problematic way. The first is that LID equals full retention of the design storm, as was just proposed by NRDC and advocated. I think if you look at any definition of what low-impact development is, it will say something like it's an approach toward simulating or preserving pre-development hydrology. That means that we're trying to match the pre-development water balance. So whatever runoff ran off before it was developed should also be running off after the storm. It's fundamentally different than a full retention standard, which is proposed there. The other assumption that I think the permit makes is that LID equals MEP. In most cases, that is probably correct, and certainly advocate retention of stormwater where possible, and when that is not possible, additional measures should be taken. What I think this permit does is it essentially requires implementation of LID to the maximum extent practicable, which is fundamentally different than reducing discharge of pollutants to the maximum extent practicable. The way the LID waiver provision is written, you basically have to do LID, and if you can't do LID, then you get kicked into the waiver program. That's not what the Clean Water Act asks us to do. It asks us to reduce the discharge of pollutants to the maximum extent practicable. In my view, the LID waiver program should be changed to an MEP waiver program, so that if you're not doing the MEP on your site, if you're not treating using the most effective controls that are also financially feasible, then you should be required to do something off-site. I think that that's a fundamentally different thing than what is in this permit here, and in my view, it is not consistent with the Clean Water Act. As a short-term fix, I would generally advocate or support the county's recommendations. I would like to see that word biofilter or biotreatment changed to just filtration, recognizing that there will be instances where things like sand filters or even perhaps powered filters or disinfection systems, which may be required to meet bacteria TMDLs, for example, may be more effective than quote-unquote biotreatment treatment devices, whatever that means. It is an undefined term. And I'll also point out that further along in the permit, after that section, there is a requirement that all treatment controls have medium or high effectiveness for pollutants of concern. I would suggest to you that that is a performance standard, and that performance standard is what should be met if on-site retention is not required. And if you meet that standard, you should not be required to participate in the waiver program.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mark Gray, last speaker.
Chair Wright, thank you very much, and I'll make this brief as the last speaker. Mark Gray, Technical Director for the Construction Industry Coalition on Water Quality. I represent union contractors and management of more than 3,000 companies who build the projects that this permit will regulate. I have taken the oath, but I have not drank all the LID Kool-Aid that's going around. And I want to point out just a couple of specifics about that. And I'm going to refer specifically to the lid sizing, BMP sizing criteria. In the permit, it states lid BMP shall be sized and designed to ensure on-site retention without runoff. And VACO just brought it up. A few other speakers brought it up. We are at odds somewhat with EPA, NRDC, some of the NGOs, and the rest of the regulated community over what LID means. It is to mimic the pre-development hydrology. It's not to have a zero discharge standard. So we take some issue with that. But in staff's credit, we have included biofiltration as an option in meeting the LID standard. It says, if on-site retention lid BMPs are technically infeasible, lid biofiltration BMPs may treat any volume that is not retained on-site by the lid BMPs. We would support this permit wholeheartedly if we ended that statement right there. But unfortunately, it goes on to say that due to the flow-through design of biofiltration BMPs, and I'll point out that biofiltration isn't necessarily a flow-through BMP. It also includes detention retention BMPs such as sand filters that aren't necessarily flow-through, like vegetated swales and other more linear channel-type systems that are engineered. I'll repeat. Due to the flow-through design of biofiltration BMPs, the total volume of the BMP, including pore spaces and pre-filtered detention volume, is allowed to be no less than 0.75 times the design storm volume. Let me interpret that for you. What staff's saying is you can use biofiltration BMPs, but if you design a biofilter and put one in your project, you've got to size it to handle 3/4 of the whole design storm, not the portion of the design storm that you can't infiltrate, harvest and use, or evapotranspirate. Very important distinction, one we see in no other permits. And I've run this past other engineers that I work with. It seems like a bit of an arbitrary decision to include a performance standard such as this in the permit language. My suggestion in brief is to just eliminate that and leave the first sentence in place. My last comment is concerning hydro modification. We have seen some movement and recognition that there are cases where exemptions are appropriate for what we would term hardened channels or significantly hardened to their ultimate outlet, be it a bay, the ocean, a river, what have you. In the language in the permit, it refers to concrete lined. And I think we all recognize that not all cases we have hardened channels that are specifically concrete lined. My suggestion is to change concrete lined to hardened channels. Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate your time and appreciate staff's effort to work with us throughout this very long process.
And thank you very much for staying all day. And Mr. Neal?
Ben Neal, NEILL, and I took the oath. And everything that we've heard here today is nothing new under the sun. We heard all these comments. We had over 400 comments in the last round, 1,200 written comments in the 5 total rounds, and we're hearing a rehash of all these. We've We can answer any questions you have about the MEP and the stormwater, the non-stormwater discharges, the NELs. I'd like to point out there's numeric effluent limits in a whole slew of permits across California. There's NELs for even stormwater discharges in the Lake Tahoe permit, municipal permit. There's NELs for non-stormwater discharges in non-stormwater permits, such as groundwater dewatering permits. We looked at the geosyntech study that they provided to us about LID. We considered any economic information that they provided to us. We looked at that. There is some of it seemed a little new in the numbers. We didn't have really a chance to see the assumptions behind these numbers in this presentation, but some of it seemed to be a little bit high on the high end of based on what the assumptions are behind it. We feel that they already have programs to address illegal discharges, so if over irrigation becomes illegal discharge, then they can already address that. And in those programs for illegal discharges, we're not telling them they have to have staff on call 3 days or three shifts, 7 days a week. They have a hotline people call when they spot illegal discharges, and then they respond to them. The over-irrigation prohibition, it does not prohibit lawn watering. I heard one commenter say that. I want to clarify that. I can answer any questions about the LID and the downstream water rights holders language on why the hydro modification plan language is slightly different than the Region 8 language. Is there anything you'd like me to focus on?
Okay, well, we'll just deal with this in questions.
Okay.
Why don't we just move to the recommendation of the executive director and then we can close the hearing and we can ask questions and have a discussion.
May I make a comment before I give you my recommendation? Shortly, I won't be the executive officer, but I've sat through these permits for some years, and about 8 years ago, I sat through the Orange County permit, and I listened as the arguments were made, and I think what we've witnessed today is the maximum extent practicable of trying to influence this board to keep the permit standards as low as possible. Now, there's a lot of reason for that, because this is a very difficult endeavor. We heard from citizens who are screaming at us to clean up the water. And we have elected officials who purport to represent those citizens, yet when I hear the citizens, it's not the same thing that the elected officials are telling me. And I thought there was maybe some of you ought to follow my lead and retire. This is a difficult business. There's a bellwether in the existing permit. And it pains me to see a slide where that issue of exempting car washing is held up before the board as though it's that we gave you permission and exempted it. In my thinking, the exemption was only there unless you could determine that car washing actually contributed to or caused the problem in receiving water. Have any of the cities in Orange County exempted car washing? Okay. That's my bellwether, because what these permits do is offer the opportunity to find out where the pollution is by monitoring and then implement best management practices to reduce the pollution to meet the demands of our citizens who live, work, and recreate here. And the tensions developed over, you know, where do you set the bar? Of the recommendations that we heard today, I'm moved by the arguments on NEL. You have no idea how much the staff have discussed these matters, and we're compelled to set that bar as high as we can. I told the staff not to say that, but what we're talking about is the next 5 years, or possibly the next 6, 7, or 8 years, as was the case with the last permit. So I think that there's good cause for some changes to be made to the permit. the issue of how much water should be retained on site, the argument that it should be retained on site to get to a point where you're emulating the natural runoff is a good argument. But to let the rest of the water go if it's loaded with pollutants is not something that I think is a good idea. So perhaps retaining more water is for the purpose of pollution abatement, not to emulate the natural flow, because you have to do both. You have to emulate the natural flow, and you also have to make sure that the pollutants have been removed from the water that runs off the site, and every site's different. On the issue of NELs, the maximum extent practicable, Congress really did it to us because it's how do you measure that? How do you quantify it? And we're probing how to do that. And ultimately, I believe it will be done in the receiving water through TMDLs. That will take many years. So as far as the recommendation on the NEL, I'm going to defer to the boards and the board members and hear what your thoughts are, but I'm compelled to recommend to you to adopt this permit as it's written and live with the consequences. With that said, I think there is an opportunity to make some changes. There's been some very focused and well-stated issues, and I'm going to defer to Catherine Hagen because a lot of these are legal issues. For example, are there things in this permit that are not in the federal law and they're clearly out of that box, which sets us up for precedent of putting in a federal permit something that's from the state? So my recommendation is adoption, but I think there's opportunity for change. That would mean it would come back to you at a subsequent meeting. I don't think that could be done this evening. So with that, I'd request that you ask Catherine if she has any comments.
Ms. Hagen.
No, I don't have a concern that the permit exceeds federal law, and I've said that in the memo, and I don't think that that's the case. So I think what's in the permit, you're permitted, you may adopt the permit as written if you wish. It's legally defensible, in my opinion.
All right. I'm going to close the public hearing, and let's let's try to address some of these issues if we can. I'm inclined to agree with the executive officer's recommendation. I'd like to make just kind of a general statement. Before we get into some specifics, those of you who are familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of human needs know that drinking water, drinkable water, breathable air, housing, food, security form the basis of higher order needs. I don't know if you recall the 2005 movie. It was entitled Running Dry. And I want to put my comments in the context of drinkable water. In that movie, which was narrated by Jane Seymour, one of the speakers, I think she was from a water district in Nevada, made the comment that water quality and drinkable water are inseparable, and that it's unconscionable that we are not paying more attention to water quality, particularly as it relates to drinkable water. Basically, she goes on to say that we're like a bunch of teenagers. Maybe this is an overstatement, but we're like a bunch of teenagers, and it's time to grow up. And I think that's what this permit is all about. We're in a growing up process, and this is going to, and we're going to continue to grow up. And I And that's, you know, in general, that's the reason I think this permit is on the right mark. We're beginning to grow up. So with that, I'll turn it over to the other members of the board, and if they wish to get into some specifics. Do you want to start out, Grant, or? Okay. I think we need to hear from Mr. King this time.
Well, I do just, there's a variety of different issues, but I think that if there's anything we're going to tighten the screws on here and try to improve, I think this, you know, the numeric effluent limits for the non-stormwater discharges is an area where we are setting this up for a vast disagreement between ourselves and the co-permittees and more litigation. We're earlier in the day and we didn't have the decision by the Gregory Landfill to bring in their matter either way, and the city of San Diego here as well today. I would hate that the co-permittees today be shortchanged because a couple other matters didn't need to be heard today rather than this, rather than taking a little bit more time to get this permit where it should be. I think Ms. Hagen has in mind some alternatives for what we could do in lieu of having the numeric effluent limits for the non-stormwater discharges that could be a better alternative than the errata sheet that were provided by the county. I'm not inclined to go along with the errata, but I think that we could have something. I mean, and we have gone a couple of different directions on this thing. As in the last draft that we considered in Orange County, we had a complete prohibition. Now we've got numeric limits, and now we've got the alternative put before us of these numeric action levels. I think that what Ms. Hagen kind of briefly mentioned of maybe not a numeric limit but a qualitative limit or a narrative limit might be more appropriate and avoid this trapdoor of having these mandatory minimum penalties. And that's what we need to be aware of here, that yes, we'd rather have a permit that sets quantifiable, measurable results. But to the extent that we create this in the same system, we've got the state law setting up this system of mandatory minimum penalties. That's where the rub is, the state and federal law here, and that's not going to be something we want to have to be hitting these co-permittees for, paying penalties rather than going out and implementing more BMPs. I think that that's kind of the biggest bone of contention we've got here, and if we could work out something to harmonize what everybody wants and get this permit approved, we could start implementing this permit. I think if we drive full force ahead, damn the torpedoes, then this whole thing is just going to get bogged down for a while in litigation, and we're going to have a subsequent consequence of these mandatory minimum penalties. It would be, you know, if we survive the litigation. And I think that that's the downside that we ought to try to avoid here. And if Ms. Hagen has a solution that she's thinking of here, I would welcome it as a proposal. I'm willing to stay a little bit longer tonight. Newborn at home, notwithstanding. That's where I am, and I'm willing to bring this back again. I would love to be able to approve this on Mr. Robertus's last night as the executive officer, but this is a significant act, and if we could tighten up this one particular area here, I'd rather do that.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you that despite what I said earlier, I think if we can crack this this nut, that the rest of it I think will fall into place. I think this is the critical part, and so if anybody, Ms. Hagen, do you have any substitute language?
I don't have any substitute language in mind specifically, but I just have a couple of ideas that may be helpful to you. And I wanted to clarify something that Mr. King said, that that the NELs are being proposed in lieu of the prohibition or something to that effect, and that's not actually true. The prohibition is still required for non-stormwater discharges under the Clean Water Act. The NELs are designed to measure violations where non-stormwater discharges are not being prohibited but are nonetheless making their way out of the MS4, and it's a means of regulating that. But one possibility would be to have the prohibition against non-stormwater discharges that cause pollution in the permit, and that could be enforced using your discretion rather than mandatory minimum penalties. Violations of the prohibition could be enforced against. But then one sort of a companion to that might be to include keep the numeric effluent limits but convert them to action levels so they don't actually an exceedance of the number that's in there as the numeric effluent limit would not be a violation per se, but it would trigger the three different actions on the part of the permittees. And I haven't had a chance to discuss this with staff at length. I don't know if there are other problems with that I'm not thinking of. But that's one idea, is to then you still have the data, the monitoring is occurring so that you find out what is actually occurring and there's some triggers to require investigation of sources and so forth. And then perhaps in the next permit, numeric effluent limits are more appropriate. That's just one option that I'm thinking of. And I have not worked out a new permit language for it, but I can work on that.
Then I would like to, staff welcome specific questions. As much as you can, respond to the proposal in the county's errata with regards to the non-stormwater action levels and the revision beginning there on page 1 through page 5 of the errata. The downside of making that change to the permit.
I can also, my name is Chad Laughlin. I'm an environmental scientist in the Northern Watershed Protection Unit, and I did take the oath. And I can also provide some clarification on MMPs, hopefully, and their applicability for the non-stormwater numeric effluent limitations, and defer to Catherine for legal questions on that, too. So I don't know if you'd like me to start with discussing MMPs and applicability, or start with discussing the derivation of the numeric effluent limits and action levels.
What I'm more looking for is if you've had enough time to look at the errata proposed by the county, their proposal for the numeric action levels as opposed to the effluent limits. Have you had enough time to look at that you've got a response?
I understand.
Okay.
Under the current order, the 2002 order, the co-permittees are required to prohibit discharges of non-stormwater into the MS4, and they have their ICID monitoring programs, and currently they come up with their own action levels. These action levels trigger follow-up investigations into what the source of pollutants are, whether it is an illicit discharge, an exempted discharge, a natural source. Currently, the county sets these action levels themselves, and these levels are set not at what the water quality-based effluent limitations are, but they're set based on the existing data set statistically to look at the outliers, so to speak, to take action on. So the action levels are actually, the numbers are a little different, but they are already in the current tentative order. Otherwise, I haven't had too much of a chance to review the specific language that they have changed. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Well, I think, if I may, just the difference between what the errata include and what I was proposing is that in the errata that the discharger proposes, they would, again, set the action levels at a level they think are appropriate, whereas staff has determined levels that they think are appropriate mm-hmm. as numeric effluent limits, and you could choose to treat those as action levels. And also, I'm not sure if this permit includes an outright prohibition on non-stormwater discharges that cause or contribute to exceedances of water quality standards as compared to requiring the dischargers to effectively prohibit those discharges, but you could include a prohibition. I know that other MS4 permits have a prohibition on those discharges, and that does give you an enforcement tool that you can use if you think you have an appropriate case, but it takes you out of the mandatory realm.
So I wonder if the staff would be more receptive to the proposal of action levels, but that the action levels, as Ms. Hagen described, that are the existing ones that you drafted into the permit now as effluent limits.
So in lieu of the effluent limits, just make that, rename those as action levels, basically. Personal take on it, I would say that we would not be receptive to that. And the primary reason is because when NPDES permits are reissued, as you know, they have to evaluate existing controls to see if they're sufficient to protect water quality standards. So for the past 19 years, the co-permittees have been utilizing BMPs, only BMPs, to protect water quality standards and carry out the purpose of the Clean Water Act. So as part of the reissuance process, we evaluated those controls and the monitoring data, so the dry weather monitoring data that they've collected to date, and determined that those are not stringent enough to protect the receiving water standards. Therefore, based on that, which is called a reasonable potential analysis, is required pursuant to the federal regulations for the NPDES permits, we established water quality-based effluent limitations. So my first response to that question would therefore be no, based on the actual reasonable potential analysis that we went through. Because you are, in essence, retaining the same BMPs that have been used for the past 19 years, which our analysis showed are not protecting water quality.
I'm struggling conceptually here with why. If we have the same effluent limits, we take the effluent limits that we've proposed in this current draft permit and make those action levels, why would that necessarily mean that the co-permittees stick with all the same BMPs that are failing?
It would be negating the reasonable potential analysis for NPDES permits.
Mr. Rayfield and then Mr. Destach, if you can zero in on
I'm going to try to zero in on this. I think we've got to start from the premise that we're all vitally concerned about water quality. And I really have a tough time accepting the view that nothing's happened in the past 19 years. I just, a month or two ago, did a review of Orange County beaches over the last 10 years. And there's been a dramatic improvement in beach quality. Now, that's one measure. I agree it's not the only measure, but it is one and a very valid measure. And that comes not from me, but people like Heal the Bay, Coast Keeper, and so forth. Two problem beaches remain. But when it comes to the NEL thing, I really have, again, passion for water quality, but I'm not convinced that the NELs are going to do much to improve water quality. And in fact, if we were to implement the NELs, I would be afraid that we run the risk of diverting resources that fix the problem to monitoring and other things that don't help the problem directly. And I'd also be concerned about taking resources away from fixes to the problem to litigation, which certainly won't fix the problem in the short term or even in the long term. I think there is value in looking at the numerical action levels because that generates an action without the threat of penalties, reoccurring daily, weekly, monthly, whatever. I think, though, and as far as I'm concerned, even though Lake Tahoe or the Tahoe region is maybe doing NELs, for us and our co-permittees, this is new ground. And I'd like to see perhaps some phasing in, or I think we all know what the serious areas of concern are within Orange County and within our region. I'd like to see some program that starts focusing there, perhaps with numerical action limits, see how well that works. I think there is value in jointly setting the limits. I think the co-permittees could propose limits, could be reviewed by the staff. Staff either signs off on those, or we negotiate something different. But bottom line is, on this whole question, I think we need to focus on results, which in my mind is action levels, which in my mind gets things done. Now, listening to the folks who are in Laguna Beach who were here a little bit ago and commented on Aliso Creek, and the woman who spoke, I don't remember her name, said, "The ocean belongs to all of us." That's true, and the ocean begins at our front door no matter where we live. Whether we're in Riverside County, Laguna Beach, or somewhere else, that's where the ocean begins. And we need, I think, to be spending resources on public education and on fixes of areas we know we can fix. And I think the folks from Laguna Beach may have a misconception. If we go to NELs, that's not going to fix Aliso Creek. At least I don't think it's going to fix Aliso Creek. Not for a long time. And my fear, again, is that it will divert resources from fixing creeks like Aliso Creek. So, again, I would urge us to look at something like numerical action limits, work those out jointly, and develop a priority list of where we're going to look to fix the water quality problems.
Okay. Mr. Destache, and then Mr. Anderson.
I think I want to push forward on a comment that Mr. King made about how, if in fact the board or staff put in place numeric action limits that are similar to the NELs, then how is it, then the co-permittees are going to have to come up with BMPs that have effectively changed the way that they treat those dry weather runoff, the non-stormwater runoff. So, again, I want to ask the question again. How does setting NELs for in lieu of NELs to change the perspective of how the BMPs are going to be implemented?
Jimmy?
Jimmy Smith, senior scientist of the Northern Watershed Unit, and I have taken the oath. The bottom line is, if we change these from effluent limitations, which are appropriate for non-stormwater discharges that are to be effectively prohibited, and we make them action levels, we effectively soften the hammer that we have as a regulatory body. We shouldn't get ahead of ourselves too much here, because we haven't even let this play out yet. If we remove the exemption for over-irrigation, that's going to cut down on a lot of these flows. The pollutants that you saw put up on the screen by the co-permittees, bacteria, nutrients, are the very ones that they also identified as associated with over-irrigation. Let's get those out of there and see if we exceed these NELs. We can't avoid the discussion of MMPs, because that's, I think, the big concern of the board, that we don't want to get automatically launched into having to fine the co-permittees. There is language within the statute that allows intentional acts of a third party to alleviate the burden for MMPs to be issued. There is also language in there that says that natural flows may also alleviate the need to put MMPs on the co-permittees. So those provisions are built in, and we may not have to go to MMPs. It's not a foregone conclusion. If we move to a narrative, furthermore, we have already in the existing permit, and probably from two iterations ago, prohibitions against any discharges into and from the MS4 in a manner causing or threatening to cause a condition of pollution, contamination, or nuisance. We also have already in there non-stormwater discharge prohibitions that say each permittee must effectively prohibit all types of non-stormwater discharges into its MS4 system. They may already be liable for those. There's already penalties we may be able to assess for failure to comply with those provisions. Putting a narrative NEL out there or NAL out there doesn't get us anywhere. We already have those requirements. These NELs are really a way to assess what's allowable in non-stormwater. And those are exempted discharges, discharges exempted from prohibition that we don't think are causing or contributing to a condition of pollution. NELs allow us to assess the appropriateness of that exemption. It allows us to look at other discharges into the MS4 covered by other non-stormwater permits. Are they working? If they're working, then the discharge from those coming out of the system should not exceed NELs. And then finally, there's natural constituents that are out there. And if we can show that those are the cause of the exceedance, then the MMP probably doesn't apply.
Okay, Mr. Anderson.
Okay.
Catherine. Okay.
I just wanted to point to some permit language that that hasn't been pointed out to you that sort of continues with what Jimmy was saying, is that for non-natural causes or non-anthropogenic causes, there is a provision in the permit. It's on page 22, it's C3, that says in the third sentence that if to be relieved of the requirements to meet a numeric effluent limit and to continue and the need to continue monitoring a particular station, the permittee must demonstrate that the likely and expected cause of the NEL exceedance is non-anthropogenic in nature. So to the extent that a permittee has determined that exceedances at a certain station are being caused by non-anthropogenic sources, that can be removed from the the numeric effluent limit would no longer apply, and therefore that does take you completely outside the realm of the MMP statute, and the effluent limit simply wouldn't apply, so there would not be wouldn't be possible to violate it generating an MMP.
Well, people are thinking. A quick comment. But, you know, in many cases, and we heard testimony, that we're not going to be able to know whether phosphorus and nitrogen are coming from non-anthropogenic sources or from fertilizer. And it's not even clear whether it makes a difference when it comes to water quality. Probably ought to fix it. And I'm not arguing for changing the permit here, but I'm just saying that I'm not sure that making that distinction, at least in some cases, is very helpful. And it doesn't lead to necessarily to an improvement in water quality.
Eric, did you want to go off in a different direction, or do you want to jump in?
Okay. I'm still on the same page.
Back to you.
Let me mention what
you said.
I'm not going to go in a different direction. I'd just like to reinforce what Mr. King had said. Not Dr. King. Oh, doctor. In reading through the permit, I came up with a fairly short list, and it kind of mirrored what the co-permittees included in their errata. And I agree that the main issue, the real important issue, is what to do with the NELs, whether. And I agree that demonstrating the nature, anthropogenic or non-anthropogenic, is going to be very difficult. And I'd rather not waste the board's time and the staff's time in trying to go out and do investigations and try to figure that out. I'd rather have it trigger the action level and as an NAL, and that's my preference. And so if there's a clear way to work that out, I think their numbers pretty much mirrored what was in our tentative order. From my recollection. So anyway, so that's my preference. Does that make sense?
I'm supporting your...
I think that looking again at the errata and noting staff's reaction, that they're deceptively similar to what the way this section of the permit is drafted. They've made them receiving water quality objectives and, again, given them their own discretion to set action levels in order to achieve that. What we could do is a more surgical strike, is taking the existing language of the permit right now that has non-stormwater, dry weather, numeric effluent limitations, and change the words numeric effluent limitations to numeric action levels, and keep the same structure. We're already setting these limits, and they're not receiving water limitations, and they're not subject to their own discretion of setting them. And again, the non-anthropogenic, what we're really talking about here is the people watering their grass, and it runs off into the street, and it goes down into the storm drain, and that's going to happen. Even with the limitations we've got now to prohibit it, people are still going to do it. It's just a reality here. Are we going to find them when that happens? Immediately. It's going to just take a while before these things filter their way down to everybody on the street, and they no longer let their water, run off their driveway and into the gutter. So if we just simply changed the words in the existing draft from effluent limitations in section C on page 22 to action levels, what do we lose at that point?
Well, no. I think along with that, there's a need to review the actions themselves, and maybe that's what's necessary, is to tighten up the or increase the action levels, make them more stringent. Jimmy?
A point of clarification. If there are ordinances in place by the co-permittees that are prohibiting the over-irrigation which you speak of, now we're talking about somebody who's doing that on purpose, and that intentional act of a third party in violation of what they have in place as ordinances would alleviate them from MMP fines. So that needs to be made clear. If we go to an action level, we would have to probably craft some new language as to what it means when you exceed an action level now for non-stormwater. And I would tie it back to those existing prohibitions.
What if we create a specific discretionary penalty for violations of their own action levels as set forth in this particular section right here? So that it's not that we're going to set the ability to impose fines for violations of all action levels, but particularly for these specific action levels within this section. So that, again, so it's not mandatory, it's not automatic. Then we'd have some hammer there, and they wouldn't just be action levels like every other action level throughout the permit. They're still an action level, and they're not the effluent limitations. Inherent
with action level is you have to do something to kind of iterate your program, which is appropriate for the stormwater. I think what I hear you saying is probably a new term. It's not action level, it's not effluent limitation, but it's some kind of dry weather bar, if you will. If they exceed it, then you have to...
It's an action level that gives an additional means of enforcement.
Well, I think if you violate an action level that's a numeric action level, it's effectively an effluent limit that would subject them to mandatory minimum penalties. I don't know that you can call it something else. I can. That's something I can look at, but I don't know that you can just call it by a different name when it's really the same thing and avoid MMPs.
Right. Okay.
I have one further thought. When I reviewed this, the idea is that we have the legal authority to implement the NELs, and the argument is that it would work better than action levels. I thought maybe the co-permittees could come up with a specific location as a pilot program where they do use the NEL and we compare it to how it works with the rest of the region without exposing all of Southern Orange County, every one of those 400 pipes to the MMPs.
Yep. I would prefer not to go in that direction. It seems to me that my sense is that there's general agreement in the board on the rest of the permit. Am I reading things incorrectly? So we need to ask staff to come back, craft some language that this board can approve. Staff, certainly Ms. Hagen.
Well, just a quick comment on that. I think there were some valid points raised about biofiltration versus just filtration on the LID and some other issues there. But I over reliance on biofiltration compared to some other things.
I'd like to see if we could narrow down the issues.
That's what I was trying to do.
Okay.
I think one other issue that I see within the, well, in the original or in the draft tentative order, it states under C2 that the no later than year 3 following the adoption of the order shall the stormwater dry weather numeric effluent monitoring start. I think if we go in the direction of action limits, we reduce that time frame, and we're going to see some monitoring that shows us where we're headed with this. And I think that's important. I mean, 3 years, we're going to wait 3 years till after we adopt this order to implement NELs. I would rather see action sooner than later, and if we have to reduce our requirement to action limits, then let's make it a year from the adoption. And then we get some movement. I mean, it's about affecting water quality. 3 years from now, we're not affecting water quality in a timely fashion if we wait 3 years. So I think we need to craft language that both puts limits that are equal or close to the NELs and implement it faster than sooner than later. I think that's an important part of this permit. And as far as NELs, that's the only comment. I think that there are other issues within the county's errata and that can be addressed, and I think we take a look at them and change them accordingly.
I must look at them. Because if we don't address them now, we're just going to be coming back and going through the same thing again. So we need to just zero in on these issues. I agree, Grant, if we if we make changes in the NEL language, there may be some other language that needs to be changed as well. And I think you just mentioned the notion of the timeline for implementation. And there may be others. Okay, so we've had Wayne mentioned the
filtration.
Well, I would also mention the reporting date, which was a problem. TMDLs, to a certain degree, was raised by the county. On Grant's point about sooner rather than later, I agree. I'm not sure that everything could be done in a year. And would it be appropriate, Grant, do you think, to do a priority list? If they know what the worst situations are, start there and work their way down, kind of thing.
I think it is, but in lieu of trying to make the permit more complicated than it already is, we need to really rely on staff to tell us where their highest concern is, and maybe work from that point.
Well, yeah, that was my point. Start, and maybe say over a period of 1 to 3 years, starting with the most important water quality issues, right, or something like that.
Okay. We've anything else? What other matters do we need to be? Do we want staff to address? Again, I think it's the NEL, for me, is the major issue.
And I want to ask staff another question about hydro modification, and maybe you can just clarify this. The tentative order requires a change in the hydro modification requirements. Is that true? Or
yes.
Okay. And to what level? To a level that no discharge, no runoff?
No, it's a hydro mod that's there's the county has to develop the actual storms that must be matched, but then there's interim criteria until they do that, where they match the 2, 5, and 10 year storm events for the flows coming off the site. And this, I guess this language was also in the 2007 San Diego permit.
So it's similar to Region 8 or?
It's similar to the Region 9, our permit San Diego.
Okay.
And we felt that was appropriate given that there are certain watersheds in Orange County that do cross over into San Diego County.
Okay. And so there, it's not a no runoff hydro modification model. It is by storm, by volume.
Right.
Basis.
Right.
Okay.
Anything else? Okay. Staff, would you read back to us the items that we want you to
ask them
to modify?
Okay. The biggie continues to be the non-stormwater numeric effluent limitations, and I believe I'm hearing the board direct me to change those to non-stormwater numeric action levels. And what that action is somewhat yet to be determined.
That's correct.
But I would offer at this point there are other provisions within the permit that currently exist that I will recommend that the action will be that the co-permittees would then have to demonstrate compliance with those existing discharge prohibitions that have been in place for several rounds. Failure to demonstrate compliance with those prohibitions then would be a violation of the permit. A couple other issues came up. Biofiltration, as it pertains to the LID provision. Biofiltration is allowable once a technical infeasibility has been made in the existing tentative order. I understand Mr. Rayfield thinks there are some valid concerns with that. I'm not sure which way he's leaning, and if you just want us to come back and present more information on that, we can do that.
No, actually, I was picking up on a comment that was made by the public that there seemed to be an over-reliance on biofiltration and to the exclusion of some other technologies or other approaches.
We feel that biofiltration has its place in LID.
I don't think that's the issue. I think the way it was read that prompted the comment was an over an emphasis on biofiltration, ignoring other possibilities to do the same thing. That was the way I understood the comment. Maybe you need to look at the transcript, public comments, and so forth, and see.
I heard two things, that conventional BMP should also be applied right away. If we do that, and that was from, I forget his name, the second to last gentleman, Vaco, we're going to really upset US EPA and NRDC. If I heard also from the very last commenter that the sizing criteria was inappropriate. Well, that change had already been made in the errata that was before you today, so that is not an issue. So if you want us to consider conventional BMPs as part of the suite of LID, I think we're going to take a step back.
No, I don't want you to do that. I'm just, maybe you need to look at the wording that they were concerned about, and I couldn't find it, so I was going to look at it, but maybe it just doesn't communicate well, is what I'm saying. So somebody reading it's getting the wrong, reading in the wrong intent.
Okay, Jimmy, so it may or may not be okay. Now, the hearing is closed, so.
The two other issues were TMDLs. I'm not sure what you want us to do with that one, and then the reporting date. Consistency with the reporting date, we have already offered within the tentative order that they can come back to us with a whole new schedule and propose how they think it should be, and then we'll review that and see if it works. We wanted the information prior to the rainy season is why we changed it to October, or prior to October. And with TMDLs, if you could help me out a little bit what the concern is, I didn't hear much detail on that.
I can't read my notes on that one very well. I just got down TMDL, and I thought the county had a proposed change that at the time I thought looked reasonable to me.
Okay, we will reevaluate the language as proposed by the county on TMDLs.
Mr. King.
I don't know that we agree we want to kind of leave this with a broad sweeping list. I think we want to agree upon the handful of one, two, three issues. And I think that we all agree that the NEL, NAL tweak, if you could refer to the other provisions that would give you means for enforcement for exceedances. Flesh that out just a little bit further, because that sounds like an adequate.
Well, there are existing discharge prohibitions.
Right.
Prohibition A1 was what I read to you before, and then also specifically for non-stormwater, prohibition B1 basically say you shouldn't have anything coming out of your system that causes or contributes to pollutants, and that's been in there. These NELs were a way to get at that. A way to assess compliance with that. But if we're going to call them action levels, I'm going to rely on those existing prohibitions and seek compliance with those provisions.
Okay.
Okay.
And I thought Mr. Gray also kind of succinctly identified the issue with the biofiltration and the degree of retention and consistency between what we're requiring. If we go to biofiltration, then is the retention still 100%, or you're allowing?
No.
Help me flesh that out a little bit.
Biofilter size, the volume retention that can go into there, must be 0.75 of the design storm for that portion of the flow that doesn't get retained on site. And that was a clarification we made in the agenda package before you. So that change has already been made, and perhaps Mr. Gray hadn't seen that change.
Okay, so we're left with the NELs. And I understand what you're saying, Jimmy, but I think there's probably a need for some language clarification along the lines that you were talking about.
Are we in agreement that we've got one issue?
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, there's one issue.
So just the one issue? Because I think that's... And then there's no other changes.
The explanations we've had.
Yeah. So we're not looking for a new permit. This can get this done relatively quickly, I think.
Okay. Is this something we want to try now?
No. Well,
no.
I think we can take a break and we can come back and
So we will have to change the findings and also fact sheet, and if we have specific direction to bring back changes, only changes consistent with your just most recent direction, and keep the hearing closed, we'll come back, and if it satisfies what you're intending, then that will be that. If it's not quite right, we can work on some tweaks at that time.
Okay. I think that's our understanding. And we've already closed the hearing, so...
Just to clarify, then, we'll bring back the entirety of the permit as is, with the exception of any language in the findings of the fact sheets or the directives that pertain to the non-stormwater numeric effluent limitations. Everything else remains as is.
And just to be crystal clear for the record, so the changes will... the goal of the changes is to affect the board's general direction that the numeric effluent limits should be changed to numeric action levels, and should we incorporate for your consideration Mr. Destache's comment that monitoring should begin at the conclusion of the first year rather than waiting till the end of the third year?
Yes.
Okay, we'll craft something that hopefully will meet that specific direction.
And if there's any other language that needs to be changed that relates consistent with the
right.
NEL changes.
Yeah, that's. I just want to make sure we capture everything that needs to be captured so that we don't have to reopen the permit.
Okay. That takes care of item number 12, and I think the board really appreciates all the time that the stakeholders have put into this, the staff, and so on. Thank you very much.
Getting swear deep.
Yeah, we're getting there. We'll get there.
So once we forget, City of San Diego referred to re-land bill today.
Yeah.
They would be walking out of here with a permit. We can tweak it tonight.
Yeah.
But it's actually better to give them a make sure that there's nothing else that needs to flow through.
Yeah, we're close. We're close. Thank you for your zeroing in.
We can't hear you.